It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know, there's an old saying out there. It's not an old saying, I guess it's a tale or a myth or a legend of someone who was trying to explain Hindu cosmology to someone who didn't understand it. Usually the story is told that it was an old woman. And the person explained that in the Hindu cosmology, the world rests on the back of a giant cosmic elephant. And the old lady says, well, what does the elephant stand on? And the guy explaining Hindu cosmology says, a giant turtle. And the lady, being a logical sort, says, and what does the turtle stand on? And the guy replies, another turtle. And she says, and what does that turtle stand on? And he says, lady, it's turtles all the way down. I was thinking about that today when I was thinking about what I've been describing the next few months, the next year plus being. You know, I said that what we've got to get used to is the notion that however weird yesterday was, every morning when we get up, we have to realize that today is going to be weirder. And when we come to the end of the day, we must then again realize that no matter how weird today has been, tomorrow is going to be weirder still. It's weird all the way down. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where we keep the chat room, which is a merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia extravaganza and experience unlike any other. If you'd like to be part of it, well, by Jove, just go to HeadOn.live while this program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in and expect to be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky, the early arrivers who were here well before even the first bell, let alone the tardy bell. The tardy bell hasn't even rung yet. Capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold face today to become Man Cave. And, of course, pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. I just wandered in there a couple of moments ago. Yeah, I know how, you know, Sparky's out in the Pacific time zone. He says, I've been up since 5:30 a.m. to watch the weird. I was right there with you, even though I was in Eastern time. I woke up at 5:30 Eastern, out of a, and it's nothing like a kid on Christmas, just Well, it's weird. It's like jumping into a cold swimming hole. You'll get over the shock. The quicker you get in, just go for the full submersion, and have done with it. That's why Baptists don't do any of that sprinkling business. They dunk you all the way under and make sure that you don't have a sinful hair left on your head. And today did not disappoint. Today was weird. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And today, the 26th day of September 2019, is no different. Thanks going out today to our 26th of the month subscribers. That would be Peter and Melton and Michael in Madison. Thank you. Thank you, all three of you, for being partial sponsors of the program and helping us knock out a quarter of any given month's funding. I'll say that we've had it happens every so often. We've had two or three subscribers fall by the wayside over the course of the month, so we're still okay. And hey, we're in the middle of fundraising free radio, so that's awesome. So thank you, Peter and Melton and Michael and Madison. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Now, given the weirdness of the day, there are a number of ways to approach it. But for my purposes, rather than working in a strictly linear fashion, because the ongoing saga of the overt criminality of Julius Geezer really isn't, to my mind, susceptible to the linear approach. So instead, I favor going at it in terms of topics and subject matter. And so instead, I've decided to start in a different place. Instead of starting in the Congress, that's very good. Jack in Shreveport says, so what you're saying is that we've got La Tortuga de Menitres, in the words of early Kyler, or a turtle of lies. That's precisely what we have. We will eventually get into some sound bites and so forth. But I've got one sound bite that I want to begin the program with. You know, Nitwit Nero is still back in his beloved New York City, even if New York City does not beloved him. I'll never forget. You know, it's amazing how quiet New York can be on a Sunday morning. All the hustle and bustle of cars and traffic. Well, I remember a Sunday morning in February, Tara Devlin, the incomparable Tara Devlin, was squiring Chris and Ferg and me around, and we had gone over to Weehawken to see the site of the Burr-Hamilton duel, because it's always fascinated me. And as we drove back through Midtown Manhattan, there was not a soul to be seen. It was as though the place had been abandoned. But at one intersection, there was one lone individual, and it was a beautiful day. High blue skies, hardly cold at all, most unseasonable for February. But there was one guy walking across the street, and he was wearing his maggot hat. And like I said, I'll not soon forget it, because the incomparable Tara Devlin slowed her car down, rolled the window down, and said, "Hey, the fuck is wrong with you? You and your MAGA hat. The fuck out of here." That's as close as I can get to doing a New York accent. But it was a delightful moment. But, yeah, he's been back in his beloved New York because of the U.N. General Assembly, even though New York doesn't beloved him. And I would suggest that he try to enjoy as much of it as possible, because once he's out of office, he may not be able to go back to New York, lest he find himself amenable to the jurisdiction of New York State law enforcement authorities, which would be delightful, because it would have an essence to it of the ancient Roman concept of exile, in which the person being exiled would be denied water and fire within a certain distance of Rome, which was supposed to be a monumental punishment for a proper Roman of the era, because there was no place like Rome, no place like Rome, no place like Rome. Among other things, people, senators and whatnot, who were convicted of what we would consider to be high crimes and misdemeanors, that would be crimes of political process, were often similarly exiled. I think one of them, there was a former consul by the name of Metellus, who proved to be someone who was willing to use his high office for personal advancement and personal aggrandizement, who wound up living in Provincia, in what we know now as Marseille, France. He was denied water and fire within 2,000 stadia of Rome, or something like that. Nitwit Nero may wind up in similar circumstances, which would mean he could never go home to his tacky Baroque-ass apartment complex there in Manhattan. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. He's been in Manhattan, and this morning he went to some sort of shitty, faux, high-toned breakfast meeting, a private breakfast at the Hotel Intercontinental in New York City. And one of the things about Nitwit Nero is that he is a terrible liar, and he will always give himself away. You know, this isn't like Perry Mason, where you only find out who done it in the final minutes of the courtroom drama, after which when the malefactor suddenly stands up in the back of the courtroom and says, God damn it, Perry Mason, you got me. Donald Trump tells us every day how guilty he is. And today was no different. Knowing that there was going to be a hearing in the House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Adam Schiff, he tied into the leaker, otherwise known as the whistleblower, in the Ukraine affair while speaking. And the folks at the Los Angeles Times got hold of the audio of his remarks. This is not a joke. This is real. And this is what the Tangerine Tiberius said.
But basically, that person never saw the report, never saw the call, meaning never saw the call, heard something, and decided that he or she, whoever the hell it is, sort of like almost a spy. I want to know who's the person that gave the whistleblower. Who's the person that gave the whistleblower the information? Because that's close to a spy. You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart, right? The spies and treason. We used to handle it a little differently than we do now.
As usual, there's what he says, and then there's the reaction of the faithful there, munching away on their chafing dish scrambled eggs and their they're floating in a puddle of greased sausage. Ha 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 ha! Yeah, you that maggot gives a ha ha ha. When the president of the United States puts out a hit on the whistleblower. And of course, because we know, because of what we know from Michael Cohen's testimony, you know, he said he never tells you do this or do that. He just says something and you understand that that is what you're supposed to do. What we have there is a case of textbook stochastic terrorism, whereby the terrorist, in this case, Donald J. Trump, a domestic enemy of the Constitution of the United States, suggests that one of his gunned-up freak followers should eliminate the whistleblower. And he does it by innuendo, because he thinks that makes him look clever. When in fact every lawyer in this country who has previous history doing prosecutorial work knows that that right there is witness intimidation and witness tampering. Add that to the list of his other felonies. He wants the whistleblower killed. Of course, the whistleblower's complaint was released today, and it is as damning. It is probably more damning than anybody thought it would be. Both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal have now published stories not giving the identity of the whistleblower, but saying that they have ascertained that the whistleblower was a career CIA analyst who had been seconded to the White House. There's nothing unusual in this. Career CIA analysts are seconded to every White House. But this rogue presidency, this criminal presidency, this felonious presidency, this unconstitutional presidency set off all manner of alarm bells for whomever the whistleblower is. And as per usual, Donald Trump considers himself having been spied upon, because he is a deeply mentally ill man who is practically eaten alive by his own paranoia. I'll reiterate that while there is no definitive diagnosis, that tertiary neurosyphilis, often results in that kind of paranoid behavior. Whatever the case, whether it was an intellectual disability with which he was born, and which his wealth managed to cover up for the majority of his life, or whether it is some other form of mental decay, we're watching it in full bloom. Because Nixon had an enemies list. And yes, Nixon made recordings of him saying how much he didn't like people. But I do not recall an instance, others in the community may, I don't recall an instance of Nixon standing before a group of buffet browsing Republicans and putting out a hit like some sort of goddamn mob boss on someone he didn't like. Granted, he participated, he had firsthand knowledge of the Watergate break-in at Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist, and he then participated in the cover-up. But I don't recall, I don't recall him putting out any overt calls for the murder of a political enemy. That, of course, was not all he said at this private breakfast at the Hotel Intercontinental. And see, the fact that the LA Times got audio of it will make him even crazier, because that means that somebody there among the faithful in that private breakfast got a recording and dropped the dime. He had some special words saved up for the Fourth Estate, the only profession mentioned specifically in the Constitution. Not the doctors, not the lawyers, not the, not the accountants, just the journalists are specifically enumerated in the Constitution, the press. And also in the same remarks, he said, you know, these animals in the press, they're animals, some of the worst human beings you'll ever meet, they're scum. Many of them are scum, and then you'll have some good reporters, but not many of them. I'll be honest with you. Yeah. Because, see, they're not sucking his tiny toes like the GOP does. Because in his twisted reality, everyone is supposed to worship him as ultimate monarch. Hopefully, innocent people don't talk like that. When he calls for a hit, like the mob boss he desperately wants to be, well, it's pretty much an admission of guilt. Getting complaints about the gain again. So I'm tweaking that a little bit along the way to hopefully make people happy. But again, anybody with any prosecutorial experience would take a quote like that and say, an innocent man does not say that. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury. They're scum. Some of the worst human beings you'll ever meet. The good reporters, of course, that he refers to, are the ones who talk about how fantabulous he is. That would be your Sean Hannity, and Sean Hannity's not a journalist, and your Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson's not a reporter. And Laura Ingraham's not a human being. So I thought that would be a good place to start. The fact that the President of the United States is admitting guilt. And of course, the maggots in the audience who laughed at the idea of the extrajudicial slaughter of a whistleblower. I trust by now most of you have probably read the whistleblower complaint. I did as soon as it became available. It was really rather comical watching the Morning Zoo crew over on MSNBC, including but not limited to Joe and Mika and Claire McCaskill and Nicole Wallace, and I think Willie Geist was there, and they were all furiously trying to read the complaint on air in real time before the hearing in the House Intelligence Committee could be gaveled to order. I was doing the same thing. But then again, I'm not a member of the multimillionaire for-profit media. And I also wasn't on air. Flavio with a note. Someone tied those remarks to the Rosenbergs and Roy Cohn. Well, about what we do with spies. That fits. That fits. Kyle with a note. Yep, darn it. Donald Trump today threatened to kill, in no uncertain terms, the former CIA officer who knows of his calls with the Ukraine president, during which Trump threatened to withhold military aid if that country's president didn't investigate for make up shit on one of Trump's political opponents. This has all taken an extremely dark turn. I don't say this lightly. With the way Trump is acting, we may have to be ready to take to the streets to save our way of life. And if we have to take to the streets to save our way of life, well, our way of life is toast. Because, as I've explained before, in America today, you can only take to the streets on Saturday, and you spend Sunday going home because you have to be at work on Monday, or else the car payment and the house payment and the insurance for the homeowners and the car and the life insurance and the power bill and the water bill and the sewage bill and the gas bill and the cable bill, for Christ's sakes, all go unpaid, and then everything collapses. But Kyle points out Trump could admit that he did absolutely all the crimes for which he has been investigated and describe how he did them right down to the last detail, and the maggots would still believe that it's fake news or the deep state put him up to lying by admitting his crimes. This is 30-35% of the country that we're up against who believe like this. Yeah. We're just going to have to deal with the fact that if this country is going to be saved and if this country is going to be fixed, 30-35% of the country will not be on board with us. I was chatting with Reverbo earlier today. And he said, from one big picture guy to another, your one-line synthesis of our essential trouble was exactly right. Whereas smart used to be able to sweep stupid off to the side, lately this is reversed. Intelligence, scholarship, science, and knowledge are unable to suppress the power of a well-funded, determined stupid anymore. That's why things suck and progress is stalled. We've allowed ourselves to be beset with selfish, self-serving men who ignore or deny reality. It is a cavalcade of crazy, a symphony of stupid, and the ruling class is laughing all the way to their banks. And I mentioned to Reverbo that years ago he presented a metaphor of America as an idling bus that has waited patiently for the stupid to get on board and go into the future with us. And I thought of that when I saw what Reverbo had written and thought about what we had been discussing the previous day, that we have reached some sort of tipping point in this country where we can no longer carry the stupid along with us. And Reverbo pointed out, yeah, that used to be the case, but reason and progress aren't driving the bus anymore. Assholes are. You might find this interesting. Via the Washington Examiner, which is a filthy little right-wing rag, with the announcement that by the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times that the whistleblower is a career CIA analyst. Well, a pair of Trump supporters, I mean, okay, it's Jack Berkman and Jacob Wohl. You may recall those two were the goobers who tried to dummy up a fake sex scandal on Robert Mueller. You may also recall that Berkman gave his press conference with his fly down. You may also recall that Jacob Wohl tried to beat himself up and then call police and say that black folks and or Muslims in Minneapolis at the behest of, Ilhan Omar, had beaten the crap out of him, and then it was found out that the entire thing was a fraud. But yes, Jack Berkman and Jacob Wohl have put out a $50,000 bounty to anyone who will identify the whistleblower. Of course, if anybody thinks that Jack Berkman and Jacob Wohl have $50,000, well, they are, they're dumber than Trump. But I'll say this much. Sometimes it's better to be public than to try to hide. And they're not, the whistleblower isn't hiding per se, but is in fact working within the structure of the whistleblower laws as they exist. And whistleblower identities are supposed to be protected under those laws so that the whistleblower can be completely candid and forthcoming. And for everybody from Princess Lindsey Graham to bug-eyed Devin Nunes to Nitwit Nero himself, it is eating them alive not knowing who the whistleblower is. Because they want retribution. Not because there's anything untrue in what the whistleblower did or anything illegal in what the whistleblower did. The whistleblower was not a fucking spy. The whistleblower arguably is as close to patriotic as a member of the CIA can be. And saw things, and they're detailed in the whistleblower complaint. That, they're shocking within the context of anybody but Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, and of course Donald Trump. I kind of left Gerald Ford out of that. And, of course, George H.W. Bush was a former director of the CIA. According to Wohl and Berkman, again, who specialize in trying to gin up fake scandals, this individual is key to understanding exactly what happened. Let's use Jacob Wohl's voice. This individual is key to understanding exactly what happened and how we can move forward. Oh, that was Berkman. We've put forward this reward in hopes of bringing more information to light and putting this dark chapter behind us. Yeah. No. No, just no. What's this? Todd in South Carolina, Stan says, I can't wait to let Todd be Todd. Todd must be Todd. Notes coming in from Monique via Twitter. You know what's crazy, Bob? These people are really the curtain in The Wizard of Oz pulled back. All those medals and crisp uniforms, but nothing but empty suits. The generals are nothing but medals, not the real fighting troops. Why don't they all just buy land on a compound and live together? They don't have to pay taxes to keep their guns and leave us who actually like people alone. Start Trumplandia. Bye, y'all. Ugh. Tired of Trump addicts. Oh, I know. And when you're talking about generals and admirals, and Admiral McGuire has what appears to be a lengthy and honorable service record, as he noted, his military service extended back to 8 presidents ago. I guess he got his commission as a naval officer under, Richard Nixon. And served under Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Pappy Bush, Clinton, Dim Leader, Obama, and no. I must have missed one. No, that's 8. That's 8. And retired in 2010. But his explanation for why he did things the way he did was far less than satisfactory. To try to create because you know there's a lot of legalistic mumbo jumbo incorporated in the statutory discussions that took place today. But what it boiled down to is he found out about the Inspector General's report on the complaint, which described it as both credible and urgent. Well, imagine you live in a small town, and you've got a small town police force. And you get a report from a cop that says, there's a burglar working our neighborhoods. And the burglar is the chief of police. And the fence where he's selling the goods is the attorney, is the prosecuting attorney. Well, what McGuire did under that scenario is he immediately went running to the chief of police and the prosecutor about the allegation that the chief and the prosecutor were running a burglary ring. Now, let's pretend for a moment, extending that metaphor, that he also could have gone, could have ignored recognizing that the chief of police and the prosecutor were the subject of the complaint. He could have said, maybe that wouldn't be so smart. I'll go to the city council instead. McGuire could have done that. He could have gone straight to Richard Burr in the Senate Intel Committee and Adam Schiff in the House Committee on Intelligence, but he chose not to do that. He chose instead to fall back on his military training, which was to follow the chain of command no matter what. It did, his choice did not serve him well. Adam Schiff made certain to treat him with dignity and respect, even though he asked hard questions about the choices that he made. Previously, McGuire had denied an allegation that he had threatened to resign straight up if he was not allowed to go to the Congress. And that is how he wound up in front of the committee this morning. It tells you a lot about the Republican attitude toward this, that Devin Nunes, who used to be the Intel chair and is now the ranking member, Devin Nunes, I've seen him in a number of hearings going, God knows, way back, you know, to the bad old days of Benghazi and but her emails. And when he sat down this morning, you can go watch the video. He was positively bug-eyed. And what I said in the moment was that he either knows something he doesn't want to know, or he's holding back he's trying to hold back ripping off a really noisy fart, and he's not sure whether he's going to gamble and lose or not. It was that pronounced. And whereas Chairman Schiff, who, by the way, out of his very, very busy schedule, still found time on the day that the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act was introduced, he still found time to jump out there and become an original co-sponsor of the bill, H.R. 2050, for which I will be forever grateful. Chairman Schiff was respectful, he was firm, but treated McGuire with dignity and respect. Nunes, however, had his marching orders, as he always has had, because Nunes is a maggot through and through. And listen, because we know about my ongoing lack of general knowledge of the population dynamics of California, what the fuck is wrong with Fresno? Why do they keep sending that goon to the Congress? Is there really not one single person in that entire congressional district who would be better at that job than Devin Nunes? Because that kind of means that that entire congressional district is badly wanting both in morals and ethics, let alone brains. Damnation. But instead of treating McGuire with respect, Admiral McGuire, Nunes was snarky and a smartass and pissed and moaned about how all of that should be done in the dark and in the secret and behind closed doors so that the Merkin people couldn't find out what a goddamn criminal Donald Trump is. But it kind of blew up in his face. Because, again, Devin Nunes is atne ute aitbre, if you one what I een me. And I always use pig Latin for that because I know it'll take the little lurking maggots the better part of the rest of the evening to sort out what I had just said. To paraphrase Yosemite Sam, maggots is so stupid. But Nunes tried to make it, he was under orders to make it sound like somebody was spying on Donald Trump, because that animates Donald Trump, and he has been convinced since before he was not exactly elected president that he was being spied upon, and has told us so in no uncertain terms on any number of occasions. This, too, is a function of his ongoing mental decline and demise manifesting itself as a monumental case of the howling paranoids. I'm talking about the paranoids that you get, worse than the paranoids that you get when you haven't smoked weed in a long time, and all of a sudden you get hold of some really badass loud, and the next thing you know, you're listening to your own blood rushing through your bloodstream, and your heart rate speeds up, and you kind of get down in a crouch because you're pretty sure that the heart attack is coming, and so are the police, and oh my God! Yeah, a lot worse than that. Way worse. Way, way worse. But again, as I said, it blew up in his face. When McGuire explained, no, these calls are monitored by staff inside the White House, as many as 12 or more sometimes, depending on the relevance to given departments, that members of the NSC staff will be in on the calls, and that people from the relevant Department of the Department of State. And he used an example. He said, for instance, a call with Ukraine would be monitored by Department of State for Europe, Department of State for Russia, Department of the CIA relating to Europe, the CIA relating to Russia, the Department of the DNI, the SIGINT people. But probably one of the most interesting things, because it back references the so-called memorandum that was released yesterday, is the idea that these things are monitored in real time, and that there is some sort of voice recognition software that transcribes it. So one of the things we found out today is that yesterday's faked up, frauded up, rubed up, dummied up memorandum is not anywhere near long enough to cover the length of a 30-minute phone call. Rather than a memorandum, it is far more something like a very brief synopsis, a brief and selective synopsis. Had the damn thing been written in Sharpie, it could not have been more obvious that it had been doctored up for public consumption, and even then it turned out to be damning. Megan with a note. Subject line, spies and traitors. Nitwit Nero needs to not go there with threatening death to those who betray him. We treated traitors to our country the same way he alleges we treated spies, and he was caught actively seeking foreign interference to help him win an election. Something similar occurred to me. You know, if you think back to the impeachment clause, impeachment has two enumerated grounds to support it, that is, treason and bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, I've explained that extortion falls under the 18th century rubric of bribery, quid pro quo, but then there's treason. And this may not be crystal clear, but work with me for a moment. The President of the United States takes an oath to defend not the United States, but the Constitution. And Adam Schiff alluded to this in his opening remarks this morning. The oath sworn by the incoming president is to the Constitution, to protect and defend the Constitution from all, faithfully execute the laws, and to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Of particular importance there is the word enemies. One description of treason embodied in the Constitution is that of giving aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States. If you merge those things together, what you'll find is that one may commit treason, arguably. This is kind of a novel idea. But one may commit treason by providing aid and comfort to a domestic enemy of the United States. Just out of curiosity, I mean, think about that for a moment. What would constitute a domestic enemy of the United States? Well, a domestic enemy of the United States would be a group of people who wanted to do violence to an entire segment of the United States population. The Klan, for instance, is a domestic enemy of the United States. The neo-Nazis are a domestic enemy of the United States. The neo-Nazis marched in Charlottesville screaming at the top of their idiot lungs, "Jews will not replace us." They are internal domestic enemies of Jewish people in the United States. Donald Trump described them as very fine people. You might say in that instance that Donald Trump gave aid and comfort to the neo-Nazis in the United States. And in fact, people like David Duke confirmed exactly that in the aftermath of Charlottesville. So is it possible that out of this transaction, and out of his declaration that he wants to see the whistleblower murdered in cold blood, that Donald Trump is committing treason against the United States? Could that conduct be deemed treasonous? We are at present in what Shakespeare referred to as the undiscovered country. We are in a place where arguably there are more questions than answers. And some people knew that we were going in this direction. Some people saw us already go in this direction. I offer you one Don McGahn. Now, Don McGahn is since long gone from the White House, but he was White House counsel. And during his tenure as White House counsel, back in 2018, in the spring of 2018, little more than a year into his misbegotten presidency, Trump was beating his tiny fists on the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, demanding that the Department of Justice prosecute Hillary Clinton and James Comey. That was when Don McGahn stepped in and said, Mr. President, you don't have the authority to do that. You can't order that. If even asking someone to look into doing that would constitute an abuse of power. And then McGahn had lawyers under him in the White House write a memo, and I'm sure they had to use really short words because, of course, Donald Trump can barely read. And that memo warned him that if he asked law enforcement to investigate Hillary Clinton and James Comey, that a whole shitstorm would boil up over him and start raining all over him, and that among other things that could happen to him would be impeachment. Again, that was the spring of 2018. Don McGahn then left, having achieved his goal of keeping Donald Trump from giving anything resembling a sworn statement to Robert Mueller, because Don McGahn recognized that Donald Trump could not open his mouth without committing perjury. Because that was as far as Don McGahn was willing to go, because Don McGahn wasn't some, you know, he had risen to the highest ranks of Republican lawyering, but he didn't come from, and we discussed this at one time, he didn't come from some hot shit law school like Harvard or Yale or Stanford. He'd come from a meat and potatoes law school, and he had scrounged and scrapped and clawed and scrambled his way up the ladder, and he was not about to go all the way back down it, sliding on shit that had fallen on him from Donald Trump, whose rump was immediately above his noggin. And so to be on the safe side, Don McGahn broke camp and boogied. But once Don McGahn was gone, Chlamydia Claudius saw that there was no one to restrain or constrain him from such behavior any longer. And that's how we got to late July and August of 2019, when, like a dog returning to its vomit, he went back to the idea of trying to leverage the power of the White House to do dirty on his political opponents. Back to what the fuck is wrong with Fresno. Joey says, the I-99 corridor from Fresno to Bakersfield all the way up to Modesto, these stupid farming fucks keep voting Republican even after the rest of the state of California has figured it out, and almost all of them vote Democratic. Well, that jibes with something that my dear friend long gone, now Bruce, used to say, driving through farm country in Wisconsin. He'd say, Bob, these stupid fuckers think that because they've got a little bit of money and a little bit of seed corn saved up, that they're goddamn Republicans. They don't realize a Republican would fuck them in a country minute. Don't know why that is about farmers. Maybe it has thus ever been. Because farmers are nervous types, constantly worried about too much rain or too little rain, or and thus kept in a state of nervous exhaustion. I don't know. But that does, you know, make some sense. Yes, Monique, you're right. Devin Nunez is, in fact, suing an anonymous person with a Twitter account called Devin Nunez's Mom and Devin Nunez's Cow. Monique says, talk about Snowflake. And yeah, long story short, as Monique points out, Crazy Rudy, who spent 14 years fucking his cousin, and Trump, who spent a lot of years trying to figure out a way to do his daughter, if he didn't actually do her, admitted on television what they did in real time. And again, that's kind of the opposite of kind of the opposite of the great mystery TV series of days gone by, and much more like the 70s style of mystery drama where they show you up front who did it, and then you have to watch the heroic investigator, whether it was McMillan's wife or McLeod or Columbo, try to stumble and bumble and figure out what you already knew. Everything old is new again. David in South Carolina, Stein said, if Donald Trump was Russian and betrayed Mother Russia as he betrays the USA, Vlad Putin would not be very patient. Russian tea would be served. Yes, that Russian tea with the lovely polonium cubes. I'm going to say it again and again and again until it becomes like a mantra. However crazy today was, tomorrow's going to be crazier. But understand, that McGahn saw the behavior, and that explains a lot for why he's not there anymore. He knew it was coming. Oh yeah. But McGuire is a bit of a challenge, because try for just a moment to comprehend the mind that looks at a statute that says shall and reading it as, I better go tell the boss about this. Shall deliver to Congress. Instead of doing that, I think I better go tell the chief of police and the prosecutor that somebody's ratting them out for running a burglary and fencing ring. That maggot loyalty runs deep. By the way, from the For What It's Worth department, Lanny Davis, who is the public mouthpiece for the incarcerated Michael Cohen, is trying to get what the inmates around here refer to as windshield therapy. He's trying to get Michael Cohen brought before Congress to explain the criminal behavior of Donald Trump. Davis did a conversation with Rick Unger on Unger's show today. We'll pass on the clip. But Lanny Davis says he's reached out to Chairman Cummings, Nadler, and Schiff, saying that Cohen wants to do some more cooperating and wants to be a key witness, the way John Dean was a key witness, to translate the criminal behavior of the president. My guess is he may not be brought on board. Because it would further muddy the waters. They got a tight case right now. They don't want to loosen it up by bringing on someone that the Republicans can hoot at. Oh, he's a convicted liar! Rip. Yeah, hey, dumbass, guess what he lied about? He lied for your boss. Because they're all Trump's underlings. And one last thing before I go to the phones. Shame on Devin Nunes. Well, not shame on, but there was one little remark he made that was not lost on me when he alleged that Democrats went looking to Ukraine trying to find naked pictures of Donald Trump. So somebody has told Devin Nunes something. Now, bear in mind, the PP tape never said that the PP tape allegations in the Steele dossier never said that Donald Trump was naked. He was fully clothed. The Russian whores were naked. And they were directed to urinate on the bed where Barack Obama and Michelle had slept when they traveled to Russia. And for all we know, Chlamydia Claudius stood there with his hand, or at least probably a thumb and an index finger, on his little Mario Kart mushroom. Ugh. As regarding farmers, Flavio says, it goes back to the French Revolution. As so many historians of the period remind us, the country folk, or paysans, were deeply conservative, monarchist, deeply religious, superstitious, and were against the revolution. The city slickers were the revolutionaries, anti-monarchists. Yeah, but the farmers in post-revolutionary America were a cantankerous lot. It was farmers who made up the bulk of what were called the over-mountain men, who got all liquored up, crossed the Smoky Mountains, and kicked the living shit out of the British at the Battle of Kings Mountain. But then again, they were hillbillies. So I guess it sort of balances. Okay, that's enough filibobster. Still more to get into, but I suspect we will. I prefer to do it through the course of conversation. I find that much more informative. Because minds open up that way. And it never ceases to happen when the other mind in the conversation is our buddy Todd. Hey, Todd.
Who is it? It's Jimmy.
What?
I know it's Bob Kincaid, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know why we won't give that Trump a chance.
Yeah. And look here. This is Jimmy with Frontier. Now, we down the road a piece, and we just called it. It's a curse call. And we didn't call you, right? We just trying to let you.
You know, it certainly sounds like a Frontier call because it's dropping out every other syllable. Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy. Todd. Well, that certainly is weird.
They leave that man alone.
Hey,
attention to what that man say.
Well, I'll tell you what, Frontier's doing a hell of a job this evening.
All right, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I could envision that. I could see it. Wow. Look, this shit is crazy. So I guess you listen to the hearings, what happened today. Now,
well, you feel, yeah, days like this, you feel like you have to watch because you're a witness to history.
Don't you feel like I need to get my tri-corner hat out and my little big buckle black shoes and find some cobblestones to walk on or some shit? I was in disbelief. I was in disbelief at what I was hearing. I was riveted to the radio until I had broke off a couple of times. I'm going to re-listen again because it was so rich in content, you know. And you hit on the major points. If folks need to listen, you got to go to C-SPAN and listen to the whole thing. Because when Adam Schiff, I mean, it was like pulling teeth to get the director of national intelligence to say, well, you understand to ask a foreign government for help, right? Well, I'm not sure about that. What? He's like, wait. No. If I'm going off base here, please tell me, correct?
No, okay. Yeah, I'm
sharp my cord.
Yeah.
So, oh, God, the radio's falling. That shit was upsetting. You know, that's like, I talked with our mutual friend today, and we both said the same thing. Like, okay, so you're taking the crime to the criminal. What the fuck is that about? And all right, I'll answer the question. This is the coup. See, we've had a coup. We had the bloodless coup. They got all the goons
the coup happened in November 2016.
Talk about the coup for a minute, would you please?
Well, no. I mean, it was all there. In fact, it predates November 2016. It's the admission by Trey Gowdy that the only reason they had the hearings on Benghazi and but her emails were to weaken Hillary Clinton as a candidate to keep her out of the presidency. It was Comey sitting there pulling his little stunts bare weeks before the election. It was what we know the Russians goddamn well did in terms of flooding social media with their bots and their trolls.
Oh, can we stop there for one second?
It was Michael Flynn and Jill Stein sitting at the goddamn same table in Moscow.
Oh. One question IQ test. Yeah, so right. So just backing up for one second here. You know, when we saw that happening, we didn't pay enough attention. Some of us did, some of us did not. But it was a slow rolling machine. And oddly enough, and it seems like I'm the only one in the goddamn world that keeps bringing up Maria Butina, however you want to say her name. And that connection and what Obama said.
National prayer, you know, breakfast, y'all.
Go with, how? Come on, people.
I bring you Merry Christian greetings from good Christian Vlad Putin, who loves Jesus. Happy Jesus.
Do you understand that even from federal prison, when they interviewed her on NPR, Maria Butina, she is spitting out the same line that Putin says. We just want better relations between the U.S. and the United States. We just want to be friendly. That's the same shit she's spitting out.
Well, you know, you can always ask the cui bono question, too, in regard to this whole Ukraine fiasco. Who benefits if the Ukrainians don't get the weapons that we have promised to send to them for self-defense purposes.
Putin, he wants that warm weather port.
Well, he just, it's not just the warm weather port. He wants Ukraine folded back into the loving clutches of Mother Russia.
But why wouldn't you? That is like one of the best regions in Russia. That is,
well, it's the breadbasket. It's the breadbasket.
Right. It's the breadbasket.
And especially with the goddamn stupid trade wars and us us unable to sell our fucking soybeans to China anymore, if he's got Ukraine and those vast flowing fields of grain, then that's more money to sell shit to people who want to buy grain who are in a trade war with the U.S.
Man, we're dealing with high test, as the old folks used to call gasoline, high test. We're dealing with high test stupid. And it's
this is Ethel.
This is Ethel. Oh, you're going back to the Flintstones and shit. Okay. Yeah, right. That's exactly what this shit is, man. I mean, that's why I like Washington Journal, because that's the pulse of real, you know, America who votes. You know, the folks who had nothing to do, they're retired or disabled or whatever. Because you know, you can listen to the podcast, but those are real people,
right? They're real people. They get up about 6 o'clock in the morning, and they make themselves a Bloody Mary that's a drop of tomato juice drowning in an ice cold sea of vodka, and they turn on C-SPAN, baby.
You said a drop of tomato, just enough to turn it red, right?
Pink.
Oh no! Talk about them goddamn now. Them pinks is good people now. You talk about them pinks.
Yeah,
you know, no moonshine of one.
Yeah, a good maggot Bloody Mary is about the same color as the inside of my palm.
Oh my god! But this shit is so fucking crazy, man. There are so many Americans who really believe that this woman, she was only one of many, and I know Stephen Georgenstein heard this shit. She said, oh, the mentally ill Trump never does anything wrong. Everything he does is right. And I'm like, you're that woman I'm behind like every other day that's over medicated that cannot stay in her lane. And I see you in the goddamn pharmacy and shit when I'm picking up medicine for the old people. And I'm like, okay, you want too many pills. What the fuck is wrong with you? I don't see you drinking in the car, but you can't keep your fucking vehicle straight. You know, these are these mugs. We're in trouble, man. We got it's too many of them. It's a stat significant. It's over 33% of this country that are just stuck on stupid. Get the fuck out of here. Okay. So, back to the testimony.
Yeah.
Now, Adam Schiff, it was like pulling teeth. I mean, this dude is like, do I want my job or do I not want my job? Should I tell the truth or... I don't know what the fuck he was thinking about. The law is very clear. But see, all right, and I know I'm talking over you for a minute. I'm going to keep talking for like two more seconds. But you see, this goes back to what we were talking about before. Before it was a different individuals. Now it's more different, a different cadre of individuals that are most dangerous to the whole world, not only our country. Bob Barr, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, and I barely touched on Bill Barr.
That motherfucker needs to go. Why can't we impeach? Bob, why don't you do something, man? I'm serious. You can do something. Do something.
Yeah, well, here, wait a minute. Let me see if I got my magic wand over here. So, no, Nancy Pelosi's got my magic wand. God damn it.
You don't have a piece of quartz and a willow stick?
Nope, sorry.
Shit. I had the rawhide. I mean, come on, this motherfucker is ridiculous, man. What the fuck is wrong with him? I mean, why are we putting up with this bullshit? He was the main part of the coup. When he was inserted, that was that. These motherfuckers
all these questions you're asking may soon be answered.
Oh, you answered. Got your little fucking magic eight ball out now from 1978.
Well, it's getting a little loosened up because
where before it always said answer, it had the cracked screen and it said answer hazy, ask again later. One of the things that the multimillionaires who tell us proles how to think every day from the electric TV box, one of the things that they've been beating on is, well, you know, we can't do impeachment because the American people don't support it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my best impression of Richard Pryor's impression of white people.
And, oh, boy.
Well, there's new polling out. Before today's whistleblower complaint was even released, YouGov had taken a poll 2 days ago. And in that poll, 55% of Americans now support impeaching Donald Trump.
Wait, what was the difference in that? Because that shit was not there like less than 7 days ago.
Right. No, it wasn't. 55% of Americans now support impeaching Nitwit Nero. 26% oppose it. Those are your maggots. That's still within the maggot margin of maggot. And 19%, well, 19% don't buy peaches at the grocery store because they're always so hard. No, 19% don't know.
They don't know because they don't, you know, there's a whole lot of...
Well, no, I mean, 19% just don't know shit.
Right.
They don't know beans when the bag's open. They don't know to come in out of the rain. They don't know how to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. 19% of America just don't know.
They don't know. They don't care.
They don't know who's gonna win the Nextel Cup. They don't know who's gonna win the Super Bowl. They don't know who's gonna play on Saturday. They don't know. But 55% of American voters say, "Yeah, it's time to impeach his ass." And that was a survey of 2,805 American adults polled on September the 24th, namely 2 days ago.
That is a good poll. That's close to 3,000, which means that margin of error was probably around 3%, 3.5 or 3.2, something like that.
Yeah, my guess is that that 5% between 50 and 55 is not that 5%. Is a greater number than the margin of error, so it's still more than half of America. And that's before today. I suspect after today, people are going to go, well, fuck.
It was unbelievable. And your depiction of, I just couldn't believe it when I heard him say, and I read it in the Hill, like, well, the people, whoever, you know, listen and turn me in, They're close to a spy, and he knows these motherfuckers. What is it going to take?
Anybody who discloses anything about him is a spy, because he has a limited vocabulary and an even more limited understanding.
I mean,
the dude could not spell espionage if you gave him the E, the S, the P, the I, the O, the N, the A, and the G, and told him the last letter was a vowel. Is it Z? No, it's Q.
There's so much wrong with him. I got to go back to when I said he's a walking cauldron of pathologies, because it's not like he has one or two borderline personality disorders, if that's what you want to call them. That's what the professionals call it. But it's other shit going on. And I'm on board now with the spy receipts. And I'm on board with, I really believe he's learning disabled. Like, in other words, he had dyslexia. He has some type of reading disability and or ADD. And remember, he grew up.
No. See, I disagree. I disagree. I mean, he may have those things.
Okay.
But just as Trump is not the disease America suffers, Trump is a symptom of the disease America suffers, so too, if he's got some form of learning disability, it's not the core diagnosis. we struggled mightily to come up with the right term a few nights ago. He is intellectually disabled, which is what we now call, what we used to call, mental retardation. He can't, his brain doesn't think very well. It doesn't.
No.
It, and with all respect, with all respect to other forms of what is now referred to as neurodiversity, it ain't that either. He's Chance the Gardener without the charm. It's like he was born with only half a human brain. He does not have the big primate brain that the rest of us have. He's got a half of one or a third of one.
Hold
for a minute.
Uh-oh.
Because this is a moment for us to learn something about American culture and American society. If, as I suspect, his brain did not properly form during gestation, and so mommy is the one who was always saying, "Oh, my Donnie's got such a big brain. Oh, he's got such a good brain. Oh, yes, Donnie's got a good brain so he can learn not to potty."
No, you're making that up.
He can learn not to potty in his pants. No, she did.
Oh, that's fucked up.
She told him. My Donnie's a smart one. Oh, he's so smart, he's quit playing with himself in public. What a big brain he has. She did that shit. And you don't do that with your kid unless there's something wrong with your kid.
You got that right.
Okay? So what we're learning here out of this is the profound power of wealth in American society to mask disabilities like this. Because had he not been born rich, he would never have inherited, $100 million from his dad, which he is so fucking stupid that he lost. Okay? All right? Had he been born to middle class or lower middle class, 72-year-old Donald Trump would now be retired after having spent a lifetime in a sheltered workshop while drawing SSI.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Title II Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm. No. You're talking about he would be in a secure facility, like Uncle June in The Sopranos, the state hospital.
Well, no, he might have. He probably would have been able to function on his own. He would have been. Look, he would have been Charlie.
Oh,
Gordon.
He would have been in prison.
He would have been Charlie Gordon from Flowers for Algernon.
Oh God! You got to bring up one of my favorite books. Oh,
working there day in and day out at the bakery, and just not very much in the world.
Wow, you could be on something. It's just amazing. His performance at the UN. He was deflated. He was just, it was like he knew things were catching up. He has given up in a way. And maybe it took away his speed for a minute. And that's why I said about the Ritalin and Adderall, because if he had ADD, that's what they gave kids. Maybe he just kept taking it. And then as you get older, it just turns into speed as you're an adult.
You know, it's just one theory. But, yeah, but he is, I mean, he's profoundly stupid, and he doesn't learn. And he ruminates. He ruminates constantly. He's stuck in the, that's why he's stuck in the,
in the 80s. No, no, he doesn't ruminate. He obsesses.
Okay. Okay. I'll accept that. I'll accept that. He does. Okay. There's a fine line between the two, but I can see that. I can see. Once he gets something in his brain, he just can't let it go.
Right. Like, and he really is. He's Captain Queeg. He's been overtaken by his own paranoias. So that no matter what happens, it's never his fault, and somebody's always out to get him, and somebody's always spying on him. Remember how we were told that he likes McDonald's so much because it's fixed anonymously so nobody can poison him?
Oh, yeah. All right, that's a good piece of evidence. Yep. And he would send someone. He would send, the little racist Southie Boston dude. Who hated to do that? Anyway, yeah, right. Okay, so that is a qualifying piece of evidence there. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Think about it. If you're paranoid like that, you can go anywhere in the country. Anywhere you go, there's McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
And you just send your lackey out there. They can get the food, and they can feel safe. Because he's paranoid. Because it's, yeah. That's what it's so much wrong with him. I'll never forget, Bob, because the reason I cannot forget this is because I got four new Continental tires. And you know how much Continentals cost. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be broke for like a month and a half. Four new Continental tires. And I said, this was during the birth thing. And I said to you, no, Bob, he can't be president because he's a sociopath. And you're like, what? I was like, no, he's a sociopath. And no, I used to live in New York in the 80s. No, there's something wrong with him. Oh, he's a sociopath. I remember it like yesterday morning. I mean, and here we are. Here we are. But see, fast forward, his Mignons, because they can't say minion because it sounds too French.
Wait, you know, a minute. Hold on.
You know, they say this is why Dr. Brandy, what's her name? Brandy Bell, Brandy, I forgot now. I've read the book.
Oh, anyway, Brandy Lee.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, Brandy Lee in her recent posting, she has actually assigned another diagnosis to these the Mignons, because she's like, there's a collective dissociative disorder. And it's true, because they are out of whack. This like plenty of people call in to Washington Journal and say, no, Donald Trump tells the truth all the time. And I'm like, how much fucking pills are you taking every day, bitch? What is wrong with you?
You know, Tracy warned me that you've been beside yourself all day.
Well, I could not believe. Come on, man. This is the deep. Well, yeah, we chatted. We chatted for a minute. I had a rough day. Oh, God, I had a rough day. Woo! Oh, I can't wait for tomorrow. And then my better half, and she's just taunting me with taco. She said, now it's Taco Thursday. You know, telling me about all the tacos she's making. Anyway, that's another story. So, yeah, that's true. But to listen to this test, I mean, thank God I had the opportunity. And I was telling Tracy, you know, everyone. See, C-SPAN, the website is very clunky. It's very, like, oldish. It takes some getting used to, but it is really where some good information is. And the whole hearing is there, and they have a good search engine, and you can see everyone's testimony. You can watch all the House briefings. All that, in other words, all the House committees, when they meet, you can just see it with no commercials. Listen to it if you want to, whatever. But to hear the DNI, this guy is just, I think he's on the fence. He does not know what to do. But let me rewind a little bit. This, this, our, the person, this mentally ill fascist that is masquerading as the president is dangerous. And he has these people that follow him, the minions. His minions are dangerous, and they're gunned up, man, because they just identify with him. That's why they say, who the fuck says it's my president? You know, I mean, really, honestly, I don't see any black people saying, well, that's my president.
Well, I mean, there was some association during the Obama years because people felt like they had a buy-in, and white, ignorant, privileged bigots definitely have a sense of buy-in with the venereal Vespasian.
Mm.
He is their president.
That's two cowbells, man.
Oh, I've been doing venereal Vespasian for me. Yeah.
Good God, man.
Vespasian was you might just an aside. Vespasian was famous because his sons came to him because he had placed a tax on the use of the public urinals.
Oh, that had to be Rome.
Yeah. Yeah. Vespasian was an emperor of Rome. And what it was is they had public urinals, and they collected the urine, and the fullers and the tanners purchased the urine.
Oh, for the tanneries.
And for making wool.
Mm-hmm.
And bleaching.
Wow.
And when when Vespasian's son said, "Dad, that's just gross." Vespasian reached into the sinus of his toga, because the way you folded a toga, it winds up having a sort of pocket built into it if you fold it right, and it's called the sinus, and that's where you kept your roll, you know, your scroll of your speech and shit like that, and a little bit of money. And
how convenient! It was like a large vest pocket in the interior.
Yeah, and most people, you know, there was a toga party at one of the local watering holes recently, and damn it, I missed it. So there were
the Uggs would have been good there with toga. That would have been cool.
So you know, people showed up with a white, you know, wearing white bed sheets, you know, because toga party.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Togas were actually made of wool.
Mm.
And so
Merlino or the scratch kind.
I'm guessing the scratchy kind, and I don't know how long you'd have to launder it to get the pee-pee smell out of it. But then again, they're still trying to figure that out in Moscow. That I get a cowbell for.
Okay.
But anyway, so he reaches into the sinus of his toga and pulls out a coin. And he holds it up to his boys, and he says, "Pecunia non olet." Which translates from the Latin to the English as "money doesn't stink."
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So they're you know, that's why he's the venereal Vespasian.
Now I see it. It's appropriate on so many levels because number one, you know, it's
except
Vespasian out of shit.
Yeah, except Vespasian was very, very intelligent and a fairly effective emperor.
Yeah, well, that would negate something. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. I got a question coming in here from Scott in San Diego. Bob, Todd.
What's up, Scott?
Bob, Todd, help me with this, please, please, please. What was the deal with Dan Coats? Did the date of his stepping down coincide with Trump's Ukraine call and the fallout we're now seeing? A couple of times this morning, some tried to explore that terrain during McGuire's visit, but never went too far or too deep. As I recall, Coates gave for his reason that there were disagreements on policy. Was this Ukraine thing tied into the departure of Dan Coats? Well, that's one of those tune-in-tomorrow sports fans kind of moments. But Coates is gone at the end of July, and mm-hmm. Coates was a Republican. You know, he suffered from the disease, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't stand it in its Trumpian manifestation. because Trump
dissent got too much for him.
Well, Trump, no, you know, good rock ribbed Republicans who don't like Trump don't like Trump because he says the quiet parts out loud. They like their racism and their bigotry and their hatreds and their phobias.
But they like it on the down low.
Yeah, right. I mean, they whisper it among each other across their martini glasses after 5 p.m.
Have you seen the duckies up there?
Oof. Right. Oof. So, I mean, that's part of it. But just by reading the whistleblower complaint, we know some things. We know, for instance, that there was voice recognition technology used, which means that there is an actual full transcript of the Ukraine phone call in which 8 times he shook down the new president. Not a fucking memo written by Bill Barr, but an actual transcript. We also know from the whistleblower complaint that there's more than just the Ukraine call.
Well, I don't doubt that.
He had talked to Putin only a few days difference from the Ukraine call. Recall how he snatched the notes from his meeting with Putin in Helsinki.
We're not talking about his unsecured cell phone. We're talking about a landline in the White House, right?
Yeah, a landline into the White House switchboard that is secure and on which as many as 12 people were always listening. And there's no reason to think that Trump didn't know that. Because that's how the White House works. Because you don't have one-on-one calls. The other side is doing the same thing. Even if it's a call to your nearest and dearest ally. Like Putin. The other side is doing it too, so that neither side has an advantage and can go out and say that somebody said something they didn't.
Right. It keeps it fair. It keeps the game fair. I have a knife. I know you have a knife, so we all have knives.
Right. And so the thing is, those people are listening, but there are multiple calls, according to the whistleblower complaint. And those multiple calls were squirreled away onto a codenamed server so that nobody could access them.
Well, that's wrong. Okay.
Because early on in this nightmare regime, when he started lying about what went on phone calls, somebody leaked, for instance, the hissy that he had on the phone with Kevin Rudd. You know, our most, even compared to Great Britain, our most die-hard ally is our dear friends in Australia.
Right.
And he threw a shit hemorrhage on Kevin Rudd, who is, you know, see, that's another one of those things that, you know, he doesn't know what he doesn't know, Trump. So it confused him because Kevin Rudd is prime minister of, no, not Kevin Rudd. Morrison. Help me out, Robert. Robert in Australia
I can't help you.
But anyway, he gets on the phone with the Australian Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And the Australian Prime Minister comes from the Liberal Party in Australia. And I remember early on when I started, when I became friends with John Fox, he was living down there, up over there, whatever. Depends on where you are in space as to whether Australia is up or down, because there's no up or down in space. But John had to explain to me that the Liberal Party in Australia is actually the Conservative Party. It's kind of the same way if you flush the toilet in Australia, it goes in a different direction than it does if you flush it here.
That's too fucking funny.
So their liberals are conservatives.
Oh, that's too fucking funny.
And so... Somebody told Donald Trump that the Prime Minister of Australia was from the Liberal Party, and he was like, I hate him. He's a liberal. I'm speculating, but that's how stupid he fucking is.
I think that's a good stab in the.
So he threw a hissy on the Australian Prime Minister, who no, it's not Kevin Rudd, I don't think. I'll get some help here in a minute. And when he started lying about it, somebody released the transcript of the call. And it happened a couple more times. And this just ramped up his paranoia because that meant there was a leaker inside the Trump White House.
Well, how could it not be? I mean, when you're a serious person, a bureaucrat, you're serious, and you see this buffoon, this fucking mentally disabled fascist buffoon. I mean, well, they're probably fascists too, but a buffoon, you know, that's your boss. And it's like, my God, he's really that stupid. Like, wow, you're really that stupid. I mean, come on. Come on, man. At that point, when you go out to lunch, you're having like six beers. Then you go back to work. Because, I mean, what does it matter? And in D.C., remember, weed is legal. You're probably hooting up a little bit, too. Fuck. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, no, actually, it was Malcolm Turnbull.
Malcolm?
Malcolm Turnbull. Scott Morrison is the PM now, but thank you to Ralphs for looking that up for us. Ralphs serving.
Yeah, good, you got it.
Yeah, Ralph serving as the ad hoc Horn Research Department this evening. So anyway, those things get leaked, which drives his paranoia into overdrive. And he's convinced that there's a spy in the White House. Comey's probably having me spied on. Comey and Hillary definitely having me spied on. Definitely. And so they then do this thing where in order to keep anybody from having access to them, they move it over to this codenamed National Security Server, which it was patiently explained is not supposed to be used for this. He was trying to hide his misdeeds.
What? Yeah.
And so if there were disagreements on policy, well, putting presidential, arguably criminal conduct behind a codenamed server that's used for national security, well, that's policy. And if Dan Coats was true to his oath, he probably had a connection and said, you can't do that.
Did you tell me that they named the server national security? Were they trying to hide shit?
No, there's a server that they put national security stuff on.
Right, but they didn't name it. I was thinking, okay, all right.
It's been referred to today as a code word server.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, it couldn't possibly, he can't be that stupid. Okay, all right.
But, I mean, it's there in the White House, it has a purpose, and only people with certain security clearances have access to it.
Is it in the bathroom like Hillary Clinton's server?
It's in the basement.
It's in
the basement bathroom.
And a quick aside to Scott's question. Everything that I've read and been privy to, yes, there's a hell of a coincidence between the time frame of Dan Coats' resignation and his cohort, his subordinate named Sue something or another.
Sue Gordon.
Sue Gordon.
Yeah, the statute said that when Dan Coats left, Sue Gordon got the job as acting by operation of law, by operation of the statute in question that enables the Director of National Intelligence to exist in the first place. In the, you know, it's language like, in the event of the absence or the resignation or the death of the Director of National Intelligence, the Deputy Director of National Intelligence shall become the acting director. But they just said fuck all them laws. Well, no, he didn't tell her to vacate until Donald Trump said, no, she's not going to be it. She's not going to be it. Which means that there were probably any number of people inside that that regime in the national security intel community going, this is fucked up.
I'm going to tell you something. This whole thing to me is highly disturbing because now, you know, every time now we hear what we know now, what we already kind of knew, but now we see, and then you look back, and he had these infidels from Russia in the Oval Office with no one American around, no American reporters, and God knows what type of devices they planted in there. And who knows what they planted in his fucking body. We don't know. I mean, something's wrong. I mean, this whole thing stinks.
Yeah, it does.
This whole thing stinks.
And it's touching. Okay, what we learned today is that this filth, this graft, this criminality, this corruption, it touches Trump. It touches Mick Mulvaney. It touches Mike Pencilneck Geek. And it touches Bill Barr. At the very least.
Thank you. Say it again, Bob. That phrase, please.
At the very least.
That's important. That's very important. Because why do we have these stalwarts in the GOP? Like a Doughboy. I don't know if they spelled his name. Is Doug Collins' name spelled Doe?
No, it's Doug.
Well, that was a typo this morning in the Hill. It was spelled D-O-U-G-A. I was like, man, that's the name. That dude's name is not Doe. And every time I hear
they
him
spelled
speak,
it D-O-U-G-H?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Doughboy, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm prejudiced. When I hear an accent like that, my eyes light up. I'm like, all right, let me keep my eyes on this motherfucker. Because he sounds like a redneck out there to hurt me. You know?
Yeah.
He sounds like that. Fuck. You know, I mean, I'm just saying. That's the way it is. People have their protective mechanism, you know? Because most people who talk like that, you know, they act a certain way. And it's too bad. You know? But I've been down here long enough to see. And it's not all the time. You know, but it's over 50% of the time. And that's okay. You just got to know who you're dealing with.
Yeah, hashtag not all crackers.
Right. And I mean, and it's like, and they have a weird sense of self and their place in society and my place in society. Because it'll be like, they'll be, you know, polite and everything. But, you know, you can't come to my house. And don't talk. You can't talk to my daughter. Don't talk to my wife. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like.
I'm sorry about the up yours ginger, but you will have the common decency not to speak on the street.
Yeah, that kind of shit. I'm like, well, you know what? Just don't even fucking look at me. Don't, because you know, just don't.
Oh, by the way, we got a genuine Australian confirmation.
wait, did you?
Our buddy David, the angry architect up over down under, says it was Malcolm Turnbull at that time. We've moved on to the next guy now, Scott Morrison. And he's a real Lulu, too.
Okay. Well, was it Turnbull or Morrison who made it mandatory where the children have to wear a bonnet because of sun, you know, the sun and getting sun cancer? And you know,
I don't know I don't know that anybody did that. And it probably would not be Scott Morrison because he's a climate change denier in the first place. But
it wouldn't have been him.
But Malcolm Turnbull, I'm convinced that he was mad at Malcolm Turnbull going in because he heard he was a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so incurious, mm-hmm. he didn't realize that meant that was a right-wing prime minister in Australia.
He didn't know. He doesn't read. And he's incurious. He doesn't read. I mean, he only reads what he can get through that's in big print.
And David in South Carolina stand with the single word subject line, spy? Why the fuck would anyone have to spy on that loudmouth member? Stealth ain't him.
Oh.
Truth.
Let me interject this really quick, and this is so appropriate. You know how we have been joking about his unsecured cell phone. So... And you may have seen this. This was on Daily Coast some time ago. You know, that the authorities had figured out that there were these devices that are fake cell phone towers deployed all over downtown D.C. you know, emanating near the White House.
What are they, yellow jackets or hornets or wasps?
Right, it's an animal, a shark, or, some type of, now I forget what the, anyway, it has an animal name to it.
Vicuña.
So, right. So the big thing now is, like, that was Israel.
Probably.
That's a whole other subject. But, yeah, that, so, now it's bothering me now. I want to say shark, barracuda shark. Somebody, the research team will come up with it.
Honey badger.
But, those are they're terrible things. But, things happen. But so now that we know all that we know, this is exactly why you cannot have a mentally unstable person as president of the most powerful nation in the Western world, because this is too much for him today. We don't know what is going to happen now. Like tomorrow, this shit is coming out. The floodgates are open. That testimony, I'm going to listen to it again. But I'm saying this in all honesty. I'm not trying to be funny. Because the radio was on last night, and I was trying to sleep. I actually had nightmares because everything started to, come together and sink in. I'm like, oh, my God, we are fucked. We are so fucked.
This might be the unfucking. Because, see, there's another little piece of information running around out there. And by the way, Randy in PA says they're called stingrays.
Mm. That's it. See?
But
that's what I'm saying, Bob. You need to stop Bob Barr. Please, stop him.
Bill.
I expect him. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Bill Barr.
Yeah, I said Bob Barr.
Yeah, Bob was the Clinton impeachment. I think he was the one who went out in his backyard and shot watermelons with a 9mm pistol to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster.
I think he, yeah. Yep.
There was a piece of information via NBC today. Someone who had connections inside the Senate. And it was kind of a little holy shit moment. But this person said that he had spoken with Republican senators, and if the impeachment vote could be taken in secret, there were 30 Republican senators who would vote to remove Donald Trump from office.
Who said that?
I don't remember who it was. It happened on MSNBC.
It's out there in the ether. Okay.
I mean, I can look real quick.
I don't doubt that. I really don't. I mean, once again, we have to look back in the time machine. All those books. Remember the Tom Wolfe book? I forget what it was called. People laughed at him. It's like, oh, no, it can't be that bad. And I was like, yeah, maybe it is. Because Tony Schwartz was the one who wrote The Art of the Deal. And he was the first one to say it again.
Yeah, here it is.
Hey, we got to get rid of it.
Mike Murphy was involved with running presidential campaigns for McCain and Romney. Said as many as 30 Republican senators would vote to remove Trump from the White House if the ballot were kept secret.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That was last
night. Are we going to have, the miracle? Are the Eagles going to win the Super Bowl? Are we going to have, a miracle?
No, because... Wait, hold on. There is an impeachment procedural manual in the Senate. But the Senate is free to make it up as they go along. That's what they did with the Clinton trial.
Yeah, but you know who's in charge of that? Mr. Asshole.
Well, But regardless, the thing is, in a criminal trial, okay? In a criminal trial, the jurors don't come in and announce their verdict as to who, because it a verdict of guilt in a criminal trial, in almost every jurisdiction, has to be unanimous. So you mm-hmm. know that every member of the jury voted to convict. A vote of acquittal, it means that there was not a unanimous verdict, but they still don't say who voted which way. So in theory, it could be if the Senate wanted to do it that way. But I think we need to come,
okay.
I think we need to, we need to step back just a moment and take a look at something I've said in the past by way of understanding this process.
Mm-hmm.
One, Mike Pencil Neck Geek is up to his pencil neck in this.
He's scared as shit.
And there's a book out there, something like Piety and Power or something. It's a new book about Mike Pence and Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story that's told. There's a story that's told in it that has been denied by the Pence people, but it's also been confirmed by insiders to the campaign that on election night 2016. When it was announced that the unthinkable had happened and Trump had won, Pence leaned over to kiss Mother, and she pulled away and said, "You got what you want."
Oh, she knows he's dirty as
what they explain is that the plan had been for him to spend four months being Trump's running mate, for Trump to get then stomped in the election by Hillary, and then for Pence to run as God's choice for president in 2020. Only it all backfired.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because he has this mile-wide obsequious streak that his own family has described,
mm-hmm.
and because he looks at any sort of alpha male figure older and more powerful than him as a sort of daddy figure, I mean, talk about mm-hmm. daddy issues. Pence has them. He did and has repeatedly done Trump's bidding. So when Trump told him to help shake down Ukraine, he did. And then in the press conference with President Duda of Poland, he even said the quiet parts out loud there, too.
Mm.
So it's obvious that he is part of this. So here's where it gets dicey. Here's where the deal making happens, and of course we all know that we all know that Geezer Disgustus is the king of the deal.
Right.
If he is not real,
you're getting deep in this doo doo. This is some serious. Okay, I just want to pause.
If he does not win re-election, Trump becomes immediately indictable on the campaign finance violations in the Southern District of New York.
Absolutely.
If he gets reelected, the statute of limitations runs, and he's saved a little bit. But the state of New York is also looking into him, too. So those aren't the state of New York charges, and other federal charges don't necessarily have statutes of limitations running with them.
Mm-hmm.
Just those ones where he is an unindicted co-conspirator right now.
Right.
So if it is at all, and he is scared shitless, Trump is. It's been widely reported that he called Nancy Pelosi and said, "Hey, Nancy, can't we make a deal about all this, about the Ukraine stuff?" And she said, "Yeah, we can make a deal. Tell your administration, tell your people to obey the fucking law." And so he hangs up.
I don't doubt that.
So he hangs up. Yeah, because she's tough. You know, she's Baltimore girl.
I mean, I don't doubt that he would initiate a call of it.
No. He did. And you know, to quote Bill Murray from, you know, she's from Baltimore, and to quote Bill Murray from Ghostbusters, she's a harbor chick. But she, you know, she said, you know, no, we're not going to play any games because, you know, she knows he's a liar. She knows he's a criminal. And so he hangs up, and then she has her press conference and announces that she supports an impeachment inquiry, and he filled his Depends right then and there. And he is scared to fucking death because the walls are closing in. So he's got to figure out a way to keep the walls. You know, he's Luke Skywalker, and he's got to get out of that trash compactor. And he, but okay. You know, being Trump, he doesn't care if he has to climb over Chewie and Princess Leia both and let them get squished. He'll throw anybody under the bus. He threw Mike Pence under the bus already.
This is what most people are concerned about.
And see, when criminals involved in a conspiracy like this start ratting on each other, it gets real nasty real fast.
Right.
And the only way they can keep it from falling completely apart is for somebody to go to him and say, "Mr. President, it's time to go." Because they are going to impeach you. They've got the goods on you. It doesn't matter how loudly you scream that you were spied on. You weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Every president that's occupied that office has people who monitor phone calls as a matter of course for the protection of the presidency and of national security. But you're a crook, Donnie. And you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail.
That fucker is done.
That is, if you don't do something and do something quick. So your choice here is to either be bunkmates and die in the arms of Paul Manafort in prison, or work out a deal where Mike Pence is not charged, you resign, he pardons you, and you do not go to prison. It's that or prison, Donnie, because everybody is finally sick of your shit and they're not going to take the rap for you because you won't be there to pardon them.
You're making a strong case. That sounds very plausible. That would account for his really, really, really less than, you know, braggadocious behavior lately, and now his talking about spies, you know. But see, on the flip side, now I get what you're saying, but on the flip side, there's always another side to the coin. These people are nefarious. Remember. And this is what I'm saying. This is something that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But remember the person who took to court that you didn't matter if you're in a union or not, that you didn't have to pay and you could still get the benefits of a union. And he had the name of a two-sided coin. Now, the other side of this is that he says, fuck it, I'm going to fight because I'm an asshole and I'm going to continue to be an asshole. And he brings everything down with him. See, he's a danger because he's unstable. He's unstable.
Yeah, but even the unstable still experience fear. And when those walls get to where they're nearer to him on either side than his arms can stretch out. Well, it's corollary to the old idea that when the belly rumbles, the head will learn. when he hears the jingling keys of the warden, he may actually learn. Now, this is not me sitting here saying that everything's a done deal, because if impeachment goes to the Senate, he probably will weather it, because they will not have a secret ballot vote on whether to convict.
And that's the only way it would happen.
Moscow Mitch.
Correct.
And Princess Lindsay are still there to do his dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
But this is work that has to be done now. And if Scott is our resident Kennedy assassination and Watergate expert.
He is.
Because he just consumes and recalls so much of it. But by the time he resigned, Nixon's approval numbers were in the toilet. The thing is, Trump doesn't have to travel that far to get to Nixon-like numbers. It took Nixon 6 years to get there.
Right. Okay. So bolstering what you just said, the shift in the polls happened within just less than a week. Right? It went from some number to 55%.
Yeah.
In less than a week. And that's before most
They'll be polling tomorrow. You know, they've got to give today's information enough time to sink into the American consciousness, and then they'll ask again.
It has not worked through the cilia of the American consciousness yet to get digested and fully assimilated.
There's only one risk, and that is that as of Friday, the Congress goes into a week-long recess.
See, that's where they need to, I'm sorry.
Sometimes well, Schiff,
when you're on salary,
Chairman Schiff said today, we will be working through the recess.
Good.
Now, I don't exactly know what that means. Good. Will there be hearings? I don't know.
That's somewhat nebulous. We don't know what that means. Man,
this is one of those moments where you can't, like a college football game. It's the fourth quarter, and the team's marching, and if they score, they win, and the next thing you know, you've got a TV timeout, and that one ref walks out on the field with the red hat or whatever, and everything has to fucking stop because we got to sell some goddamn Budweiser. And when you come back, all the momentum, all that offensive momentum is gone.
It's right. But does it seem like maybe, you know, let's be honest. Everyone has, well, most people have a family or a group of friends. And within that group of friends or family, we all know who newsy people are. When I say newsy, I mean people who are, you know, stay on top of politics and news. And the folks who don't, and they wait for the newsy people to tell them what's going on. I mean, that's been my experience. That's kind of, I don't know. Has that been your experience?
Well, yeah, and you should know that Eileen in New York is agreeing with you. She says, Todd's right. Trump's instability is a danger. He just may take us all down, figuring if the world doesn't appreciate him, it's a worthless world. Well, Godwin's law is dead, so there's no worry about that anymore. Hitler thought that way, too. And he ordered Berlin and Germany to fight to the last human being, and it didn't matter if the Allies and the Russians slaughtered every last German, because they never deserved him to begin with. There's a story.
And he also
was on
pharmaceutical meth.
Oh, yeah. He was a speed freak. But there's even some documentation of him saying something like, the German people didn't deserve me. Perhaps if I had been born British, they would have understood my genius. He may get there.
Well, they're cousins
anyway. And he may say that. Trump may say that, but I don't think the rats that are running down the rope lines off the sinking ship are going to stand there and say, "Oh yeah, yeah, do that." And if he is, well, if he is a compromised president who tries to, oh, I don't know, nuke Iran. I mean, that's that right there. That's a real threat. That's
what I'm saying. He could just set off. See, this is
what former Admiral McGuire made me think about earlier today and scared me.
Mm-hmm.
Was that when you consider that he decided to follow chain of command, even though the subject of the complaint was his superior, his commander in chief, he followed it anyway and compromised the investigation.
That's what Tracy and I were pissed off. We were like, "What the fuck? Why are you taking the evidence to the criminals? What the fuck are you thinking about?" And number one, that's wrong. Number two, you know they did that shit. So what the fuck? There's no reason for that. That's craziness. Like, you're either going to make your stand, you're going to be normal, or you're going to be with the coup. Are you part of the coup or not? Now, there was a caller in the Washington Journal this morning.
And by the way, Steve from Georgistan said, "Tell Todd, Washington Journal has been off the hook. The maggots are losing their minds."
See, I'm so glad, Steve. What's up, brother? I hope you're doing well. I hope you're recovering well. I know it's been a minute, but yes. Yes. This was the day to live. I mean, the past 2 days. Oh my God!
It's not just them. I've got a clip here of the man with the voice made for print, Mark Levin. I mean, Gilbert Gottfried doing his voice shtick is more easy to listen to than Mark Levin. And by the way, I'm merging Scott into this phone call.
Oh, that's great. That's beautiful.
Are you there, Scott? Oh, Scott.
Scott.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
I was just
muted. Okay, so what I was saying is it's not just Washington Journal. People like Mark Levin have gotten their marching orders. This clip is not particularly long, but it is certainly... it is certainly exemplary of their madness. Stand by.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, President Trump comes under attack because of businesses he already created and owned, and they want his tax returns. Well, I'll tell you what. I want Nancy Pelosi's tax returns. I want the past 10 years of Nancy and Paul Pelosi's tax returns. How about every member of Congress? Not your financial disclosure forms. 10 years of tax returns. How is it that the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply to Congress but applies to a president of the United States?
That's right.
Actually, that's wrong. I got to interrupt there for a moment.
How is it that the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply? It doesn't apply, but it applies to the president of the United States.
This would be a good time for me to remind people that
Mark Levin
got his start as F. Lee Levin, Rush Limbaugh's imaginary legal counsel. Flea Levin. I mean, even Limbaugh was making fun of him. Well, here's the thing.
Does he sound like a human weasel?
No, he doesn't sound like one. He is one.
Oh, my bad.
I'm giving myself a fucking cowbell for that. Here's the thing with Levin. FOIA does not cover the executive office of the presidency. So he's wrong, and he's an idiot about that. But let's do continue.
And how come they don't walk the walk? How come they don't volunteer it? They just volunteer it. Just say the president should do it. Here it is. Here's 10 years. Illegal or not.
Now, that voice is a joker from looking here. It's some goober from the radio arm of that website that rhymes with light and fart.
Whether or not you have to do it, the president should do it. I'm giving you as an example. Here I am, Nancy Pelosi, Al Gore, Hillary Clinton. Could you imagine what a show that would be if they had the 10 of the most well-known Democrats all release their tax returns? Think John Kerry's going to do that? There's no way he's going to do that.
And how about transcripts of all the chairmen of all these committees and their conversation with foreign powers? Wouldn't that be fascinating? Or how about we hear testimony from all their top lawyers in their offices? You see, they would never do that to themselves, what they're trying
to do. Yeah, Obama's transcripts. Oh, give me those transcripts. Let's get those in the hands of our Breitbart reporters and your reporters at CRTV and elsewhere, Mark.
Yeah, so we've had enough of this. The country is now going to be dragged into this, has actually been dragged into this for 2.5 to 3 years. And I just want your audience to understand this is an attack on us. It's an attack on our constitutional system. And I would argue that what these people are doing is absolutely un-American, period.
Here's the fun part. That is some top shelf projection, because that line, this is an attack on us. It's an attack on our constitutional system. And I would argue that what these people are doing is absolutely un-American, period, is a perfect statement regarding the Trump regime writ large. These fuckers don't understand that they are dancing around in the palm of the goddess of irony. She owns them.
You think? and really, what we saw today in terms of a legally constituted, fully elected membership of a House panel dealing on these matters, I mean, that, after all, is their mandate. They were attacking the system that has been corrupted by Trump and his apologists and enablers. Levin is one. He's a big one. They used to say Nixon's the one. Well, Levin's an even bigger one. So that's my take on it. And yes, it is an attack on us being the crazies out there calling Washington Journal and all the talk radio and cable programs, the talking heads and shit, and the callers. Yes, and we rightfully should attack people like that. Because
what are the maggots going to do if these poll numbers climb north of 55%, if they get up to 60, 65, 70, 75%?
For impeachment?
For impeachment. And suddenly the maggots realize they're all alone. Now, we've said all along that they'll never abandon him. Is that necessarily true?
Well, sometimes people, even the most, ill-informed or under-informed among us, do have human nature. And the key thing in human nature is self-preservation, survival. And hell, I maintain that what the climate that we're seeing today, embodied by the presence of Trump and the way things currently are, it's a long delayed comeback to the argument that went on in the 60s and certainly in the early 70s during the days of Watergate, where one group of people thought America was on the wrong track, Nixon and his people, and another group of people thought that Nixon and his people were taking the country on the wrong track. And today, it's like a long-delayed sequel to a movie. I'm hearing phones beeping. Is that me or?
It's not me. Todd, are you
okay.
Are you there?
Are you hearing it? I'm here.
Are you
Todd,
there?
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Somebody's
face is probably touching their phone.
Well, my face would have been awfully fat because my phone is in my hand, so it ain't me.
Okie doke.
But what I'm saying is, or maybe it's Agent Fred. Maybe I'm touching upon things that Agent Fred doesn't want us to discuss. But the parallels you're right to invoke me and Watergate and Nixon and all.
Well, what were his numbers the day before he cashed his check?
His polling numbers by the public were in the low to mid 20s and no higher. But here's the irony, Bob. You talk about the goddess of irony at busy at work. If, you know, paying the little elves, if the goddess of irony has elves, they're getting paid golden time, triple overtime, you know, simply because it's flying so fast, thick, and furious. A lot of people wanted to know what was the point of Watergate, the Watergate break-in. And what a lot of people either didn't know or have forgotten, the plumbers unit, the illegally constituted plumbers unit, was established about 2 years before the Watergate break-in, whenever Daniel Ellsberg did his number, okay, with the Pentagon Papers. And there were other leaks inside and around the White House and the federal, the executive branch of government. Nixon brought the plumbers into business to plug the leak, hence the name, plumbers. So Watergate ultimately was about leaks, because a big number of the plumbers unit, the people engaged in like the break-in of Dr. Ellsberg's psychiatrist, were involved with Watergate, the break-in. Liddy was one of them. Was it McCord or Hunt? I always confuse those two. One of them had a red wig, Coke bottle lens glasses, and something in his shoe to make him limp.
I don't know for sure, but that sounds so Liddy as to be comical. Because Liddy was an old spook.
Yeah, but when they were going to break into Dr. Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office in Los Angeles, they went the full Magilla on it, in disguise. And whoever gave them their orders, I forget the member of the Nixon regime, said, now, we don't want to make a lot of noise with this. We want it to be do it as stealthily as possible. So what do? They get outside the office. There's a fucking street light on a post, a wooden, light pole that's shedding light onto what they're doing. There's a picture right there. So what do? They shoot out the fucking city light on the street. And then they break in. They're only supposed to take pictures and make notes. What do? They ransack the fucking office of Dr. Ellsberg's psychiatrist. You know, you talk about a gang who couldn't shoot straight. But anyway, getting back to Trump and the parallel to Nixon and Watergate, it's all about the leaks. He's going apeshit over the
right. And the reason that shit was illegally moved over onto that national security server was to try to stop the leakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. This is important, though, Scott, because this is commensurate with the congressional hearing where who was it that finally outed the fact that there was a shit ton of audio recordings? Was that Dean?
Alexander Butterfield.
Okay. Well, we had our Butterfield moment today because the whistleblower complaint tells us that not only is this shit over on the server, but that, and then I think it was in the bullshit memo yesterday, that voice recognition software may have been used. Well, if voice recognition software was used, and we all know it can be notorious for... the computer doesn't hear quite right. But that means that there is a real fucking transcript. Okay? Because the memo yesterday does not cover a 30-minute phone call.
Well, yeah, but this is what I'm saying. There were up to 12 people listening in to this infamous phone call. Many, if not all, were taking notes, okay? Now, from hearing the telling of this, I did not have the sense that you had professional court stenographers making a verbatim transcript. I mean, that's what a transcript is. You know how it works in court. You've got to have a professional, trained, competent.
Yeah, but a lot of broadcast outlets, for
is
instance,
there a tape?
Use voice recognition.
Say that again.
There are a lot of institutions out there that use voice recognition software. And so it will create a real-time transcript. There is not necessary. I don't know that there is a physical recording of it, but Jesus Christ, if there is.
Well, I wondered about that today. But to me, at the very least, you want to have a professional a transcription expert with that little machine with the six or eight keys, whatever it is, who type out that funny language. What do they call that language that stenographers capture on that long strip of
shorthand
paper? Shorthand? But, there's a machine that, if you've ever seen the printout of that.
I've been around a lot of them. Some people use the little keyboard, but then there's also the other thing called the steno mask.
Yes, I was just going to ask about that. Of course, now Trump talks so fast and he's so disjointed, and then you have the language problem because it didn't sound as if Zelensky.
We're kind of getting lost in the weeds, Scott.
Because, I'm sorry.
Because
you know how I get.
What's important is it ain't just this call. Apparently every one of these calls, which had an ordinary and normal and received and acknowledged and thoroughly approved of procedure before he got there, that was then screwed with and put onto this national security server so that he could say, oh, no, we can't give that to you, national security. They're all on there. Calls with Putin are on there.
Yeah. Yeah. On some level, if you ever watch that series, Air Disasters, where they talk about an airline crash, and then they go into what happened, and then they go into how they figured out what happened, it's exhaustive work. But one of the bright spots that comes out of a tragedy like that, in the case of that one that crashed in Sioux City, Iowa, some years back in the 80s, whose pilot just died the other day, Captain, I forget his name. I rewatched that episode of Air Disasters. And out of that tragedy and out of the discoveries that they made on the cause of the tragedy, it caused a lot of that type of plane to be grounded, inspected, and modified, so that type of accident wouldn't happen again. We're at that point where we need some form of NTSB to come in and say, look, here's the state of things in terms of the airworthiness of our executive branch of government. Do you get what I'm saying? I mean, and maybe
what you're talking about is a forensic investigation. I mean,
yeah, and that's what we need, especially in light of these conversations, plural.
But see, here's where it gets. I mean, this is not easy. I was impressed with Chairman Schiff's opening statement, and then the way he went about questioning Admiral McGuire. The man is a seasoned prosecutor. He did not ask, and you can go back and watch it again, he did not ask a question to which he did not already know the answer. And McGuire wanted to about halfway be there. But there was the question of the 7 days. And so that was 7 days of ass covering, paper shredding, And what is it? What is it? Trump always says that Hillary did to her sir.
She acid washed her hard drive.
Yeah, yeah.
What we don't know now is whether that server even exists anymore. But one of the things
the
code name server, the code word server. That they moved it all over onto. Because one of the things that McGuire did or said he did is the minute that he found out about the ICIG's opinion of the complaint, is he said he immediately went to the National Security Staff and the White House generally and told them to preserve everything, which, if you are a criminal enterprise, is a way of saying, get busy, boys. Destroy everything.
Well, yeah, and the point of moving that content onto that special top-secret high-tech server, in my mind, when you're thinking in how the mind of Trump operates, what's left of it, if you got evidence of that and other questionable phone calls, you want it centralized so you can shit-can it more easily when the knock comes to the door.
The only problem being is that there's other national security stuff on there that you'd best not shit can. Because that will...
Well, did you
look, part of this, and I'm halfway sorry to even whisper this into the ear of the universe, is that from day one, Trump has been shitting on the intelligence community, accusing them of spying on him in Trump Tower, which he derived from the fact that the Russian scumbags, the Russian mob guys who were occupying units inside his skeevy building, were surveilled. They were wiretapped. And Trump has what is called a mens rea. He has a guilty mind. And so something triggered him to think that because those Russian mobsters were surveilled, that they were spying on him too. Okay?
Did your ears perk up today when they were talking about intelligence agencies, plural, having access to at least the Ukraine side of the call, which would be both sides of the call, because that's how recordings operate.
Well,
perk up and say, well, gee whiz.
Nunez was trying to make it sound like the intelligence community was wiretapping the president's phone calls, because that's the claim they're going to make. And McGuire put the kibosh on that real fast. Now, might the SIGINT people have surveilled the Ukrainian side of it? It's possible. But they might just as easily have been surveilling for purposes of finding out whether Mother Russia was surveilling it, which they probably were.
Oh, yeah, because everybody listens to everybody else, or surveils, as you say, either visually or with cameras or with recording capture devices. Something shifted in me watching this today. I was kind of on the fence in terms of, you know, is this yet another thing that we brought up that ain't going to go anywhere? And something shifted with me, and I'm sure with others if they watched it. You know, this, we may finally, at long last, be on to something, and not just something, but something that's deadly serious and can be made to stick. Did you get that sense recently and today, especially watching this thing?
Don't fool yourself.
There will be other witnesses called.
Well, because it smells so Nixonian. The other stuff was different. It was sui generis to the presidency, but this is just the kind of common criminality that a common criminal like Nixon engaged in. And what I was getting at with the intelligence community is that you know, it was apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, it was a veteran CIA agent seconded to the White House who said, you know, enough already. And that says something. Because it was someone who was in the White House and had been approved by Trump. I mean, the CIA, because remember, the CIA is, or was at one point, we don't know how long this individual was there, Mike Pompeo.
Yeah.
And now Gina Haspel. And remember, Gina Haspel is the one who okayed, remember back when we learned that there were videotapes of the CIA torturing prisoners, and then the CIA announced, "Oops, those tapes were destroyed."
It was
Gina Haspel who okayed the destruction of the videotapes.
Well, and the video, you know, speaking of the CIA, you did mention the JFK thing, which I'm a student of. When the CIA in the 70s was asked to present relevant documents, you know, when the House Assassinations Committee met in the late 70s, they said, "Oh, we're sorry to have to tell you this, but they were all destroyed during the copying process." Now, have you ever used a copier to make a copy of something? And occasionally you'll lose a sheet of paper in a copier, but you've got the fucking original on the top of the machine, and you can press the button again. But to have reams of paper, and we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of documents, they were all destroyed in the copying process.
Oopsie.
And that's our CIA, you know. Oops. Yeah. Do we lose Todd? Because I would like to hear... Todd, are you there?
Yep.
Go, man.
I know you probably saw Washington Journal today, or will watch it tomorrow. I may even watch it tomorrow. Well, what is your take on all this? Have we reached a nexus, a crossroads here?
Well, I say we're at a dangerous point in our society, and I would go back to Mr. Kincaid's Cold Civil War, because there is a statistically significant group of people who really believe that Donald Trump is an outsider and that he's doing it all. They still believe that he was on his own money to get in the campaign, and they don't see the bigger picture. And see, I'm going to go back to C. Wright Mills, okay, the power elite and white supremacy. He would not, did you think in any goddamn way that a mentally ill fucking fascist white man would be president if it weren't in the plan? They knew exactly what was going to happen after Obama got in. And see, now we know more about how the system works. It's about the system. It's about the system. This is what we're dealing with, is the system. Okay? They let Obama get in. Because remember, when I say let, it's about the Electoral College. Let. Everything was made so Obama got in, knowing there would be a backlash. These people think 30, 50 years ahead. They're very pragmatic. So here comes Trump.
Well,
they said, okay, well, yeah, because I'll be done in 10 seconds. I'll be done in 10 seconds.
No, that's right.
Look at what he's done. He's given a permanent 20% tax cut to the 1%. 20% permanent. The little bullshit they gave the middle class, who might be making some money, if you're making like 150, you know, 99, 80, whatever, you might get a little bit. That ain't nothing. That's peanuts. 20% to the power elite on top of the money they already made years ago. You see, it's hard. It's hard. It's going to be hard to take that back. He would not be in there if the power elite did not want him in there. And when they're done with him, they're going to do something to him. He's going to get pulled something. Something's going to happen to him. This is the fucking plan. And we had to realize that. This is the plan. Just like the plan where Bob lives, They don't mean for those people to live. They don't mean for the people to live in South Louisiana, where they have all those chemical refineries in South Texas along the Gulf Coast. That's what we're dealing with. So I think maybe we need to realize that.
Was this a book that you mentioned, an author or a title? You mentioned a person's name.
I'll be back.
Just.
What? Can you repeat that?
Yeah, The Power Elite. Who wrote it?
Oh, C. Wright Mills. Well, C. Wright Mills is a famous sociologist, and he coined the phrase power elite. This is very old. He's like the grandfather of sociology. And
It rang a bell. I just didn't know from where.
Yeah, C. Wright Mills. Mm-hmm. So this thing is real. I mean, just think about it. Let's think about this. Seriously, let's think about it. This is why people are fighting against doing away with the Latour College. Because when you look at it, it makes no goddamn sense. It was based in slavery. I mean, how the fuck are you going to count people who aren't even voting? I mean, at the time, it made sense. And, you know, I've been doing some research on this. Remember, 1826 was when the first time where people could really vote. Because before that, you would vote for your state legislators, and they in turn would vote for your senators, who in turn voted for the president. You know, in other words, you had to be a white landholding person, a male, to even, like, be in the mix, period. You see.
And it wasn't until the very early 1900s that people directly voted for the Senate. Am I recalling it correctly?
Well,
the timeline, it was about...
The Constitution was amended to provide for the direct election of senators, and just to provide a little bit of a tweak to what Todd said, the framers designed the House to be something resembling direct democracy, insofar as the people who could vote voted directly for the members of the House. The legislatures and the governors of the several states appointed the senators. But there was, you know, there was a popular vote for the presidency, but it was filtered through the Electoral College as it is today.
Yeah.
And you're right, what Todd, that was like then.
I mean, you're right in terms of the business of none of this stuff is happening. The presence and rise of Trump, and I hadn't really considered the presence and rise of Obama being used in the way that you just described, but that makes perfect sense if it serves the ultimate purposes of the people who are pulling the strings. You know, that should scare people or wake them up or both.
But, you know, and when you really like step back and try to look at it objectively, It really fulfills that divide and conquer type of concept, because as long as we're divided, it's like, wow, how can we do this? Because remember, we've gotten to a point where a lot of people have a lot of stuff, and people are happy. They got their iPods and cars and, you know, running water and hot, you know, thing and at point hot water here. You know, everybody's got too much shit. So it's like, oh, we gotta buck the system a little bit, you know. And think about it. Why are so many people stealing so much money? Where's all this money going? See,
Think about it. As far as why, the timing.
Going to be polluted. This planet is fucked up. We can't drink the water anymore. Did we ever think in our lifetime you wouldn't need to drink water out of the tap? Dude, we can't even drink water. Water is more expensive than gasoline. Good water.
And the oceans are going to be dead if we don't do something, and even if we do something, they may still die.
These fuckers are going to be, look, why are you, they're, look at all these independent space endeavors. The people who have money, they're going to be out somewhere on an asteroid, on a planet, the moon, who knows where.
Good luck to
them. They won't be here.
Good luck to them, because there's nowhere out there that we can get to that is livable at this moment. What they figure they'll do is, it'll be, nah,
It'll be more like those domed cities in Logan's Run.
Right. And you know what they did to those people? What, did you reach a 30, 35?
Runner! Yeah. Carousel awaits. Capricorn 32. Carousel awaits. But, you know, if you think about something like Logan's Run, did it ever occur to you that those young people who lived in the Logan's Run geodesic domes, those were the great 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 grandchildren of the wealthy people who moved into the domes and left everybody outside to die? That's why Peter Ustinov was living in the capital of the Capitol building of the United States with cats.
Because he knew he'd be safe, huh?
Well, no, he just.
I've got to rewatch that.
He could remember mother and father, and that was so alien to the dome people. What's a mother? You know, I was incubated from an egg. But that dystopia was probably a bubble city from the wealthy people who escaped into it and left all the rest of us out here to fend for ourselves. In what time remains to us, I do want to turn us back to one other reality, and this is the part that is driving Trump bananas. Because as he complained in that audio, let's see, what did he say? I want to know who's the person who gave the whistleblower the information, because that's close to a spy. You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart, right? The spies and treason, we used to handle it a little differently than we do now. So he knows, you know, he doesn't know much. And per the Dunning-Kruger effect, he doesn't know what he doesn't know. But he does know that the whistleblower was acting on information that came, according to the complaint, from multiple White House sources who all said the same thing. They were consistent in their description of this event. So that means that there are multiple people inside the Trump White House who are scared shitless of what is going on here, because, among other things, they know that he won't take one for them, and they're damn sure not going to Leavenworth for his orange ass. And it's gotten
good news, I think.
And it's gotten to that point, but they do not. But those people do not have the courage of their convictions, because none of them filed a complaint. They went to somebody who said, "Hey, will you take the heat for us? Because we're maggots." And we're chicken shits, okay? So the whistleblower, he doesn't know who the whistleblower is, but what's scaring him even more is he doesn't know. Remember, they've been in a paranoid frenzy from jump. You remember Rince?
That was the word I was going to use.
Remember Rince? Remember Rince Priebus running around confiscating cell phones?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
Okay, so there are multiple
long ago innocent days.
there are at least two people, and probably several more. And it would tend to have to be people who were on that phone call, who also know about the skullduggery of moving all that shit over to another server. Who told this agent?
Yo, I mean, excuse me, gentlemen. So we can all agree that he's paranoid. We understand that, and we understand that he's a substance abuser in a term of stimulant, which makes you even more paranoid. So, Bob, you might be onto something here, because he has to extricate himself from this system that he's in. It's going to drive him crazy. He can't stand it.
And see, he had the, in his business in his business dealings, he had to in his business dealings he had the ability, because he had fixers like Michael Cohen, to cover this shit up, and
nobody ever got close enough to him to make the cover-up the crime. But once you're in government, the cover-up is what always gets you. And by the way, going back for a minute to the Logan's Run comment, Robert in Australia says, I read the book. It was originally about overpopulation. No domed cities. The travel cars went anywhere on the planet. But at 21, you reported to a sleep shop to be put down. You don't report, and a Sandman would be sent after you. They changed it for the movie so they could use older actors. So it wasn't 30, it was 21.
Oh,
because the planet was so thoroughly overpopulated. And remember, overpopulation is also the central theme of Soylent Green, but that's kind of an aside. And there's one more thing that I want to put out there that's been tickling my brain all day long since I watched the hearing, and that's this. I happened to see, and it was on that filthy morning habit of mine, I was watching the morning that they interviewed buttoned-down, squared-away Marine General James Mattis, former Secretary of Defense. And they tried to get him to say to talk about Trump. And at one point in time, at one point during the interview, he said something, and this is very close to exact. He said, well, I'm going to maintain my silence because I think the president is entitled to my silence. Remember the adults in the room memo that had us all in such a tizzy for a while? The anonymously published memo talking about how there really were people inside the Trump administration who were trying to curb his excesses. Well, there was a lot of navel gazing, and a lot of people thought that it had words in it that James Mattis was known to use, and they thought he was the author.
Oh, yeah.
I think this affair tells us it was not James Mattis, and that whoever it was is probably still there. And they're not, and it was a senior administration official, which is not the same thing as a cabinet member. And depending on how long, what your length of service is, let's say if you're a CIA analyst and you've been there for a long time, that might be considered senior. We might be learning a little bit about that. But back to Mattis for just a minute, and your thoughts after I finish. How much longer, knowing what we know now, is James Mattis entitled? Is the president entitled to James Mattis's silence? And they said, "Well, how long is that going to be?" And he said, "Oh, you'll know." Well, after this, shouldn't somebody be pecking on James Mattis's door, saying, "Isn't it time, sir?"
Yeah. Well, I was thinking back again to the Watergate era. For years, nobody really knew, I mean, verifiably knew, who the identity of Deep Throat, Mark Felt, longtime FBI guy. And he did a solid for America, Mark Felt did, in the sense that he kept the reporters, Woodward and Bernstein, on within the borders of the road so that they could investigate themselves based on staying on the road and things would open up for them. And a lot of people on Nixon's side just defamed. And even today, you hear people who don't have a single syllable good to say about Mark Felt. There are Mark Felts in our government today, people who are seasoned people who have been around, who know how the game goes, and they know who the players are. And I would think that it's incumbent upon them to step up. Now, as to whether they will, you'll have to ask somebody smarter than me. And I'm not talking about people who have spent a lifetime gaming the system, so to speak. I'm talking about people who actually give a shit about the caliber and quality of our state of government and our national being, you know? And some say, well, Mark Felt's motives was when Hoover died, he didn't get named the director of the FBI, being number three in the lineup. Well, that may well be. Maybe there was some sour grapes there. But I would like to think that Mark Felt had enough sense and love for country and his system of government to say, no, look, you know, gaming the system and game playing will only take you so far. When you get down to the short rows, somebody's got to stand for something more than where we currently are. And I would like to think that there are people in positions of knowing who will be listened to and their information will be acted upon. And maybe they won't go public, but the very least they could do is nudge someone with their elbow and let them in on some stuff like Felt did. And we, it may be another 30 years before we know who they are, if they do it. But damn, the clock is ticking. We need to know what the fuck's going on with this guy. Because if, Todd, you scare the hell out of me when you mention the thing about Obama being placed and the nefarious nature of what was behind that to rile the people up, to make the atmosphere such that 8 years later, we'd be presented with the likes of Trump. Because that makes me wonder, in 2020, in November, if we do make our voices heard and request and demand a course correction, House, Senate, and executive, to what effect will it ultimately be? Maybe these people, these puppet masters, have something else in mind. And that's the part that scares the fluorescent piss out of me.
I'm a little, you know? I take a little bit of a differing approach. I think the greatest risk we face is that if we can get shed of Donald Trump, everybody will say, well, we got shed of Donald Trump. All our troubles are over. And it'll be exactly.
Yeah, they'll buy the illusion.
It'll be the exact same thing that happened after Nixon waved bye-bye and got on the helicopter. Well, the Constitution survived that.
Well, that's over.
Our republic is strong.
Yeah.
Our long national nightmare is finally over. And then, you know, from Nixon's exit to Reagan's arrival was less than 6 years. And we're back into the back into the grift. We're back into the filth. We're back into the criminality all over again.
All right. I'm looking at this. I know you got to go, but Scott and Bob, but especially Scott. So it appears that you see, Trump can be dead and gone. Trump's mission is done. These people are riled up. They really believe in what Trump says. They believe in him. That's why they say that's my president. They are living vicariously through him because he says the things they feel. They're making a connection with the nonsense that he spews. So we're never going to be rid of these people. And what we have to look out for is what is going to be the affluence, you know, the poop out of this.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be some poop. This cannot go on. But at the same time, you have a whole other group.
But Todd, I'm looking at history. Consider, you know, we've talked a lot about the 25th Amendment. Consider how long it took from the incapacity of Woodrow Wilson through the death in office of Warren Gamaliel Harding, through the death in office of FDR. Through Eisenhower's heart attacks, through John Kennedy being assassinated, before the Congress and the states acting together
finally amended the Constitution to deal with an issue that had been bedeviling the country for over 100 years, and that is what happens upon the death of the president, because there was no clear constitutional answer. And they ratify the 25th Amendment, and it's got that language in it that I've pointed out, and nobody else has, or such other body as Congress may by law provide, and Congress has never bothered to provide it. And even after Ronald Reagan was gone at the end of his presidency, the Congress still doesn't sit down and soberly consider what happens when the president loses his fucking mind.
Damn, Bob, that's a brilliant observation.
And so here we are.
They covered everything.
And so here we are. And if we can get shed of him, we will probably make the same mistake that was made after Nixon, and that is, I know it's a Civil War analogy, I apologize, but after the first battle of Bull Run, the Confederate forces actually had the upper hand and could have driven the Union forces to ground and utterly destroyed that army. It was in disarray, and they could have marched right up to the White House and executed Abraham Lincoln. All right?
They didn't know they were going to do that.
I'm not saying they should have. I'm talking about historical possibility. But instead, because they were weary and worn out and already half-starved, they stopped and looted the Union baggage train so they could put some shoes on, probably found some officers' liquor, and got loaded and lost the best opportunity they would have over the course of that horrible conflict.
God bless American spirits.
God bless liquor. Well, you know, God let the Scots and the Irish invent whiskey so they would never rule the world.
And that was a bunch of
Scots Irish. But just to wrap this up and put a bow on it, after Nixon, the country did the same thing as the Confederates did after First Bull Run. They stopped and threw a party. Oh, look at us. How aren't we awesome? Didn't we just save the nation? Yay, us. And did very little. I mean, there were things done, but did very little in the long run to keep the next Nixon from happening. And here we fucking are. So I am not sanguine about the idea that if we can just get shed of Trump, that we're going to engage the sweeping reforms that desperately need to be done. I keep saying somebody needs to be keeping a list.
I'm not either.
I mean, I'm in the light of what Todd was talking about earlier about the puppet masters and the, you know, the elite like that. I'm thinking, well, what's the point? We're not going to change anything anyway. But one thing, you mentioned that pivotal moment in the early part of the Civil War, and I'm not a Civil War scholar, but when you think about it, it's relevant for today. They opted for shoes and booze, which led the war to continue, which led to a Union victory, which led to Reconstruction, which all these years later, lingering hatred of Reconstruction and the lost cause led to the atmosphere in the minds of many, many people, at least a third of them.
Right, and the next thing you know, Nazis are marching in Charlottesville in 2017 in defense of a statue of Robert E. fucking Lee. Ain't history interesting?
Yeah, it makes you wonder out loud, well, geez, who
but,
won,
you know, in the
ultimately?
I don't think we can say that because there was too much blood spilled for too much change, but the aftermath certainly continues to reverberate.
Well, that's what I mean by when I say who won. I mean that in the longest possible term. I should have said, well, shit, who's winning?
Well, that's why I grew up with cars with comical little tags on the front bumper. when I was a little kid that showed a Confederate soldier with the stars and bars over his shoulder, and all it said was, and this was the 1960s and 1970s, and you didn't cuss in public in Alabama, but you did in this case because it said, "Forget hell."
I've seen those.
Right.
Okay.
When I think back
to Katherine Graham and Ben Bradley sitting there polishing their goddamn Pulitzers after Nixon was gone, and then not 8 years later pontificating to the United States as Ronald Reagan was shitting on the Constitution, and them pontificating to the United States that, well, the United States cannot stand another constitutional crisis like Watergate. Fuck you both, dead as you are.
Yeah.
Okay? Because they missed everything. Watergate was not a constitutional crisis. Watergate wound up being the Constitution working as it was designed to work. That's not a crisis when something works. It's a crisis when it doesn't. And that's what we have now, and what that hearing was today was a beginning of an attempt to drag the Constitution back onto the rails and out of the ditch.
We're back to where we started. Why could they not get that motherfucker, this Navy SEAL, to say, I did not follow process. I did not follow the law. He said, well, I did what I was advised. No, that's not the fucking law.
Because if he had said...
The law said you're supposed to take...
Mm-mm, no. He had plausible deniability with an alleged vagary as to whether or not the law in question applied. It really was not as vague as he made it out to be, and it was a bullshit argument. But he had, I guarantee you, one of those people sitting behind him was from the DOJ, and they were ready with a goddamned indictment if he said what you wanted him to say.
Well, and not only that,
he was on the fence. That little pink Negro was on the fence. He didn't know if it was coming or going. But at the end of the day, he didn't make a stand. He did not make a stand.
He was nearly 40 years in the military, in the Navy. He ended up being a vice admiral. You don't get to that level without knowing the first rule of military behavior, CYA. He was protecting his own ass.
Right, because
nobody likes to look bad.
The Department of Justice, knowing that this motherfucker, here's what goes back to Bob Barr, is a fucking nefarious. He's a criminally insane person. Fuck him.
And he is John Mitchell right now. He's morphing from a frog into John Mitchell, even as we speak. And what but I assure you. Those references to OLC, the Office of Legal Counsel, and the DOJ, and that business about, well, you know, we're bound to abide by the OLC. Well, who do you think's pulling the OLC's strings? The OLC the OLC is the same outfit that said that Bill Barr didn't have to recuse himself previously. All right. They had 7 days.
Hold on, Todd.
There were 7 days.
I'm having a fucking heart attack.
There were 7 days that they had to fix their story. And those were 7 days for Bill Barr to look at a retired rear admiral who had never had so much as a single blemish on his record and say, well, Admiral, it's going to be a real shame to send you to prison.
And also say, well, here's somebody we can use. His record's impeccable. Nobody will question anything he has to say. You know? But didn't the OLC...
This is a criminal enterprise, but wait. Todd was about to have a baby, Scott.
Or a heart attack.
See, this goes full circle. This is what I'm saying. This goes back to the motherfucking coup. This asshole, like the other assholes that this fucking mentally ill fascist and the self-hating Jew And the guy who stepped out, who gave him the list of Federalist judges, the lawyer who you mentioned earlier, McGahn, who's a fucking white supremacist too, probably. See, it's all about white supremacy. Let's get this straight. This is all about white supremacy. And they're scared, scared. Because you can't stop what's inevitable, but that's another story. So anyway, this is about they do not want and they cannot stand what is happening. Now, Bill Barr made sure that he said in his job interview, which is, in his case, at his stature, was the congressional hearings. He was asked point blank. So, what do you have to say about foreign influence in a campaign? And he stalled. He couldn't even fucking answer. That motherfucker took like 30 seconds. He started twiddling his jowls and looking like a pig like he already is. He didn't know what the fuck to say. And I challenge anybody, any motherfucker on this planet to challenge me on that. Stand up. If you're a fucking man, stand up and challenge me on that. And that's what he did. He's like, well, I don't know. I have to look at the case. Well, probably it's okay. So, in other words, they let you know. This is what devils do. Just like the fucking snake story. I told you I was a snake. It tells these motherfuckers are telling you they are nefarious and they're snakes. He told you. He told us. Yes, it's okay if a foreign entity interferes with our election. He was asked that. And he said, okay. He thought about it for a minute. He's like, well, I wouldn't have a problem. You know, it's okay. And if I'm wrong, Bob Kincaid, you tell me that. Because you saw that shit, too. Your pink ass. Then you see it.
I saw it.
I got a question real quick.
Here we come with this bullshit. Here we come. You see, they're covering their ass. That's what I'm saying. It's a coup.
I think I see the baby's head.
Because these motherfuckers ain't French. It's a coop. A chicken coop. God damn it.
Breathe, right. Todd. I've got one last
question. Letting go now. Letting everything
think
go.
Think of your feet.
You see what I'm saying? All right.
Ask your feet to relax.
Look,
think of your
calves.
Look, ask your calves to relax.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Think of your knees.
They have already thought this out. They knew they were dirty. Remember, this is all fucking tied up with the NRA, the evangelicals, Russia, money. Remember, we had 7 high-level Congress people go to Russia on the 4th of July that week.
Well, a quick quote and a quick question. A wiser man than me said, what do you expect from a pig but a grunt? And the quick question, didn't the OLC once upon a time give us the notion that a sitting president cannot be indicted?
Yes,
isn't that
they
the
did.
Same outfit?
Yeah, it's the same bunch.
Bingo. There you go.
So now what, Mr. Kincaid, besides Frontier?
Now we just repeat our new mantra. No matter how weird yesterday was, today was weirder. And no matter how weird today was, tomorrow will be weirder still.
Well, I see martinis in my future. I see ice cold vodka martini.
Oh, by the way, Todd,
have you had olives?
Todd, have you had a delivery? I mean, Scott, have you had a delivery?
No, I was going to ask about that. Let me look again. I looked earlier.
It should be on the way.
Good.
your generous benefactor let me know that it was coming.
Good. No, nothing over
now,
here.
You might have to check. You might have to go out and pick up one of those $9.95 Mr. Coffee grinders. I'm not sure if it's bean or ground.
Well, yeah, if it's bean, I can get a. I used to have a grinder, but I lost custody of it in a divorce proceeding years ago. But yeah, I can get one. And I appreciate God, whoever the
minister. I just want to we're going to celebrate the day that you're drinking a real cup of coffee.
Oh my God, that's what I was about to ask Scott. Because it's interesting because I hear the freeze dried nut, just anything freeze dried is interesting because you turn something from liquid or a mass into crystal.
But see, that's the thing. This community takes care of each other. I know for a fact that someone was the recipient of your largesse because you have access to better grits. And meanwhile, having listened to Scott.
Oh, don't wait a minute. Don't try to mail no grit. You know how much that shit costs to fucking mail? Are you kidding me?
Well, that's because you didn't use the if it fits, it ships box.
It wouldn't fit in. I tried.
Yeah, they got multiple boxes.
Well, I tried a bunch of envelopes and then.
But anyway, and so, here. It's just sad and wrong to hear Scott singing the praises of freeze-dried coffee, and another member of the community took care of that. So you guys, we're 20 minutes over. I got to get out of here. It's been a dandy.
Well,
it has. And I'm Bob and Todd especially, because you were on your call. I thank you both for letting me chime in. I did kind of get conjured,
Because I did.
We are in interesting times, to say the least, and it bears watching.
It was good hearing from you, Scott. And every time I think about San Diego, man, I think about Ocean Beach and the Woodies and the not that kind of, the car festival. I was there for that.
Oh yeah.
And
And just San the Diego vibe of the place.
Tracy
was
there.
Right yesterday. We have got to get you out here. For a minimum of a week to 14 days.
I'm coming out there I'll have a little crew with me.
You know what? I think a fine time to do it would be the dead of winter here.
Oh, that's always the good time.
Because I've been to San Francisco in January, and San Francisco in January was delightful. It can only be wonderful the further south you go.
First time I was ever here, Bob. It was in early December of 89, 30 years ago. I was 2 weeks away from surgery for removal of a brain tumor. My wife at the time had a conference out here, and I got to go along. We leave Kansas City, 8 degrees in the morning. We get to San Diego, come off the plane, come out of the terminal, fucking palm trees, blue skies, gentle breeze. 73, 74 degrees. I said, holy shit. And I figured a way to get out here. It took a while, but I finally did. And
first I had to get out of marriage, I know.
That's another story. That'll be in my book. But anyway,
little place I had there, and I mean, I had to study. I was like, there was a bunch of places. Like, I was online every day at lunch. And I'm going to keep this quick because then you got to go. But I did research. I was like, I don't think I want to be in that neighborhood because it sounded good. But I was like, I went on Yelp and I was like, oh, that's a gang neighborhood. I'm like, no, I don't want to go there. So
was this in Ocean Beach?
Ocean Beach is like a low class white place, but it's okay. You know what I'm saying? But it was fine for my need, and it was great. And what I'm saying is that you could walk. And I tell this story. I had a Chevy Cavalier. $80 for eight. I was there for 8 days. $80 for the whole 8 days. And I was on the highway, and I was going to L.A. And I turned around. I said, what the fuck am I doing going to L.A.? Fuck that. I'm going back to the beach. I could walk to the post office, the library, and Safeway. We're in walking distance of where I was staying, and it was right across from the beach. Like, you cross the street, you're on the beach. Boom. The store there, 18th. Like Beck's was on sale every day. So I had a case of Beck's every day. So, of course, I had a bunch of friends giving away beer. Oh, my God. And I'm just people are friendly, man. Mushrooms. I didn't want to. When I got back to work, they were like, Todd, you look so different. I saw tan and fucking relaxed. I was a new man. I'm just telling you. Look,
well, it's
I'm
like
going
that.
Back.
It's like that song. You're out here having fun in the warm California sun. Come on out, plenty of room. Oof. I'll buy you. I'll treat you to one of our world famous organically grown snow cones.
Look, those people who got on at the early end of California, man, like in the 40s, man, they were onto something. Can you imagine what it would have been like to get? Nobody was going out there. I wanted to have
And not only that, I don't mean to be a travelogue for San Diego or California generally, but we demand to have cars that don't foul our air. We demand clean water. We demand a fair shake for as many people as we possibly can. The state takes responsibility for itself. How many other states can you say that about, you know?
Look,
and
even
we're not
the homeless
all laid back
people had
hippies.
Suits. The homeless well, people had suits.
Yeah. It's come on out. Come on out. Dead of winter.
Bob,
we'll make a place.
Hey man. Hey listen, I heard a rumor. It's like vagrants are coming into Bob's yard and they're using his damn Blackstone at night when he doesn't know. And they're grilling steaks, doing all types of nefarious things on his black.
That's where all my propane's been going.
See, I'm just telling.
They're not vagrants; they're bars. The bars are standing up on their hind legs and making fried potatoes.
Wearing aprons, saying "Kiss the cook."
Yo, maybe next week we'll have some crazy stuff to talk about because this right, you know, we're in American history. This really is like people will be like, I remember if we have any teeth left, you know, this is some real shit. This is some real.
Well, circle this day, boys and girls. This day is comparable to the day John Dean testified during the Senate Watergate hearings. And it's also comparable to the day that Alexander Butterfield disclosed the taping system in the White House. Circle the day. Do it in red. I think something shifted today. Big time. Big time. I hope
Bob does something about these people because he has the power. He's just refusing to use his power. And I'm a little disappointed.
Well, sometimes you have to let people make their own mistakes, Todd. All right, we're out of here. You guys take care.
Bye, people.
See you,
take
see
care,
you Todd.
Bob. See
take you,
care,
Scott.
Man, family.
And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. It goes where it needs to go. And thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to the News Ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Friday on the front porch. Tomorrow.